These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Cause when them old boys raised on shotguns, we say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. Grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody. No, that's a good old microwave over at Justin's house while he heats up his morning breakfast burrito. You're listening to Mad Science at www.chazizradio.com. And in case you haven't noticed, I've been joined by some super geniuses out there in the world. I got Jermaine Fishwick on here, Justin Aldridge, and Muddy Muddy Mudman, and Raymond Head. And myself, of course. So, for those folks out there listening in on Radio Tuna, which actually probably ain't listening in on Radio Tuna because Radio Tuna seems to have an issue these days, but if you know people that are listening in on Radio Tuna, tell them to jump over there to the Shazizz Radio chat room for the alternative radio player, which you can find at www.shazizradio.com/radio.html. Whew! Man, that's a whole lot of saying there.
I don't know what's wrong with radio, Jonah.
I don't know. Maybe it had something to do with we might have got too political or something. And
I think it's got something to do with Adobe.
Well, that could be too. It's hard to say, but either way, the player's still on the website, and it's. But if you look right where the player should be, there is a red button there that says "Backup Radio Player." Just click on that; it'll open up a page with a backup player just for just such an emergency for the web users. So if you're listening in on an iPod or iPad or all those other nifty gizmos, cell phones, there's many choices out there you can actually listen into. I'm sure you figured that out by now. But either way, now that we've got through all of that, I typed in the chat room, "What was that ruckus?" because that's one of my favorite scenes from that show, The Breakfast Club. And Stephen Gibbons says, "Can you describe the ruckus? Any of you guys know what the ruckus was?"
Yeah, I think somebody fell down.
Yeah, that was it. I think he was messing with something on the ceiling and wiped out and made a big mess. But oh, I love that scene. That kid, when he said, "Could you describe the ruckus, sir?" That was one of my favorite scenes in that whole show.
He could have fallen down. Some lizard head got re-indicted by the FBI on some email charge.
Oh, yeah. Well, save that for the Knights of the Round Table. We'll work that one out. But, yeah, that's that's another one of the deals there, man. That's an issue. We got to get through this scene.
I didn't get to sleep till 3 o'clock last night. I thought I was just too excited.
Man. All right. Well, hold your excitement on that for tomorrow. Meanwhile, Thomas reminded me of a link. He actually posted a link to share with me. What in tarnation? Somebody blowing their nose live on air? Who does that?
No, not me.
Man, yeah. Duct tape and bailing wire, that's what I'm talking about. Anyway, Thomas reminded me of a video. He posted a link in the private chat right there, and it's basically a solar motor that is made out of some cups and some stretched out trash bags, and essentially the heat heats up the strips on the trash bag, and they expand and contract whenever it's in the sun. It's the hottest, and then it basically starts to move and then cools down on the way down, and then the next one in line, so forth, heats up, and it basically spins the little rotor there. And he actually made several different sizes of it. There are also a couple links in there of actual solar motors where they took solar panels and built the equivalents of a pulse motor that whenever the solar panel's in the sun, it sends some energy to a coil, which in turn causes it to deflect off of a magnet and then turn the rotor. And actually, there's probably about two or three links in there. What's going on over there, you guys?
Not much.
There's somebody's over there like clanging, banging on stuff. You guys doing Mad Science Live or what?
Oh, that's a fly.
Oh. Well, see, this is what super geniuses do, folks. I'm sorry, but that happens. Anyway, there's...
flies don't smoke.
Huh?
Who says flies don't smoke?
Well, it depends on how many volts you run through them. My bug zapper has four extra 500 volt capacitors on there, so mine not only turns them into dust but sends them into the next dimension.
Buddy wants to lick at one.
Oh no, Raymond did that once or twice.
Well, but he didn't use his for killing flies and stuff, so he didn't have to sanitize it. It's gonna take a lot of alcohol for this one.
All right. So let's try to get to some mad science here instead of licking electric fly swatters. Doggone it. We know the government's corrupt. We'll talk about that tomorrow.
Beyond corrupt.
Yeah, that's when we get the extra listeners from the alphabet soup gang. Yeah,
everybody's there for Thomas. He's not.
So anyway, I've always thought about these doggone solar motors. I'd like to make one on a mass scale that had a lot of torque, and it's really not as complicated as you would think it is, you know. There's some solar panels out there that you could run some electric motors with, you know. And even at that, even if you had to put like a battery on, you know, to charge the battery and use the battery for the amperage to actually run the motor, you know. And if you combined not just the solar, but you combined it in with wind, imagine, I don't know, how many of you guys remember the old merry-go-rounds out there on the playground?
Yeah.
You know, you remember how, like, you get that thing going real good, you like, one kid's, all the other kids are on it, you're off of it, and you're running around in circles trying to spin this thing up, and then when you get an opportunity, you try to jump on and ride the centrifugal force around in the circle. Remember that?
Yeah.
And you remember ever trying to get off of it and seeing if you can stop the thing, like, by dragging your feet?
I remember flying off the thing once.
Well, yeah, the merry-go-rounds, they not only made you dizzy, but they also they built up a massive amount of centrifugal force. And if you was a kid trying to stop that doggone thing, you liable to get dragged around in the circle for a while before you finally accomplish your goal. Because once you get that mass going, then it's hard to stop it. And so what I'm trying to get you to visualize here is imagine a wind turbine that used sails that were aerodynamic as such that they could cut under the wind, you know, and they wouldn't, like when the wind's blowing, it would still grab from the backside, but, you know, kind of like the helix blade cuts through the wind.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you got solar panels down there that's actually turning an electric motor. So even when the sun wasn't out, if it was windy out, these sails would be good enough where they would still actually keep that thing going by catching whatever small amount of wind was coming through there. And if this thing was made large enough, the centrifugal force would assist it once it got up to the deal, because you notice when you first started to turn that merry-go-round, it was hard to get it going. You know, because you had the weight of all the kids on there, but the more you got that thing moving, the easier it got to go.
Newton's law.
What did you say, Jermaine?
Newton's law of inertia.
Yeah. So, taking that law of physics right there and getting that inertia going and creating that centrifugal force is wanting to throw all the kids off the doggone merry-go-round the faster you get it going, but that's why they had handlebars so you could hang on for dear life, especially if Muddy's trying to spin you around in circles, because I can visualize him as a kid. He'd be the one to try to get that thing up to Mach speed or something like that, break the sound barrier.
Yeah, that's why they got rid of them, because kids decided to put mopeds and dirt bike tires, the back tire, against the merry-go-round, and yeah, kids got hurt, flew right off, yeah.
Shoot, that'll make you go blonde for a week, you're so dizzy.
Yeah, well, it threw kids off, and, you know, kids broke arms and backs and stuff, and even major head injuries.
Well, I'm not in for the kids getting hurt, but that does sound kind of cool. That's probably something I would have tried.
Yeah.
Hey, now, I'm an adult now. I just turned 51. I think I might still go try it if I can find one.
Oh, boy.
We'll put Muddy on one. There for the ride. Muddy and Raymond and Jermaine.
Hey. Boomer had a merry-go-round. He wouldn't let me ride it, though.
How hard would it be to build one these days?
What, the merry-go-round like Boomer had?
Yeah, the big metal ones like they used to have at the playgrounds.
I don't know. It had plenty of barrels on it, and the sucker spun no matter how slow the wind was.
Yeah, see, that's what I'd like to do. I'd like to take and build one solar power, a motor underneath it that, even whenever you wasn't messing with it, it'd still be spinning, right? And then attach some sails to that as well, and do the sails. I was watching this kid out there at the lake the other day, and he had one of those parachutes that he was surfing with. Have you ever seen those kite surfing deals?
Yeah, parasails.
Yeah, that's pretty doggone cool, because he was going against the wind, and was still able to, he could guide that thing around as if it had handlebars, is what I'm trying to say here.
Ape hangers.
Yeah. Hey, now you laugh, but I still want to make my unicycle with ape hangers. And one of those horns with the little rubber ball that you squeak, and you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I'll ride it too, man. Anyway, I just think that, you know, if you could utilize something like that, that should end up having enough torque to, you know, actually generate some power. It's not going to be the holy grail of free energy or anything like that, but what I like about the whole deal is adding all the different physics to it to get this thing to run 24/7, even if the sun isn't out. If you understand where I'm going here, anybody?
Yep.
So you guys got any ideas on that? No. Push the button on the microwave again, then.
Heck, I thought before the show started there, right at the beginning, I thought he was playing with Morse code to mess with me.
Yeah, he was cooking his breakfast burrito, man.
No.
Oh, that reminds me. I got more coffee over here. Doggone.
All right, so.
No good till I get my 20th cup.
Anyway, I just wanted to share those video links because the first one doesn't take any electricity at all. All right, the first one basically relies on heat expansion and contraction of he calls them solar strips that he made out of trash bags. I'm wondering if you couldn't do the same thing with like black electrical tape or something like that. You just need the expansion and contraction from the heat to get it to go. But even at that, you know, taking all these different things together and making a self-contained system that no matter what nature's doing around you, that thing would continue to move. You know, when you talk about like Raymond's two-stage oscillator, and then how once you get that thing started, how much weight he's actually able to lift just by pushing with his hand. Imagine you take that merry-go-round, now you got it being turned by the wind, you got it being turned by the sun, you got a little thermal going on, you got some gear action that's hitting a lever that instead of Raymond sitting there pushing with his finger, he's got every time that basically the rotor, which is the merry-go-round, as it's going around, it's hitting a lever that is basically timed out to push that deal every time. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's called a dual escapement.
Yeah.
For those who are in the horological society of clockmakers, that's called a dual escapement.
How many pounds did you say he was lifting with that thing?
Oh, you know, I forget, but I know what, man. I mean, you could feel it in the ground every time that thing went bang and clunk, that arm went up and down, and he's just pushing it with his thumb. So, yeah, it's definitely over unity. He's got 13 to 1.
Well, I was out in the country on the way to my father-in-law's house, and I stopped off to look at some of these old-style windmills that they had out there that they used to pump water. They also used them to put generator heads on. It's pretty amazing what they were doing with those old windmills. Have you ever seen one of those things up close?
The wind turbines, the big ones?
The big windmills, the old style that you see in like old pictures and stuff, you know, the big giant
like
blades on them.
Look like they got window flame for blades.
Yeah.
No, I've never been up to one of those close, but they're huge.
Well, if you get a chance to, Google up some schematics or drawings of old-style windmills and look at the mechanics behind how they used to use them to pump water or turn electricity and stuff like that. It's pretty doggone amazing, man. You know, and it's still good technology. It still works. To this day, there's still some out there that are functioning. And they actually have systems where they can actually turn the head of that thing sideways for, like, during storms and stuff, so that it don't spin up so fast that it tears itself apart, because that's usually what happens. Want to get going so doggone fast that it can't hang on to the, you know, bearings anymore, and it'll literally bend a tower of the thing.
Right, but who was it themselves? I think it was Muddy earlier that said that you can't even have a windmill in Holland, right? And right. Look at here in southern Ontario. We have the Niagara Falls Generating Stations, which we sold to America, and we have right here in this region over 500 windmills that are government owned. But I can't put one up in my yard because it's illegal. You see, we know these things work great. Muddy's got some in his yard. They work great. Yeah. But you see what they don't have? They're trying to control us. No, you can't have it. But we can, and then we can overcharge you. Southern Ontario pays the highest hydro bill in all of Canada.
Wow.
And we got all the canals, we got the weirs that have hydro dams, we have the major hydro dams in Niagara Falls, and we have over 500 windmills right here. But yet we're paying the highest hydro bill. It's all about control. We know these things work great.
Well, it's ridiculous what they do to the people like that. And so, you know, a while back people would tell me all the reasons why they couldn't do certain things. You know, if they say you can't have a windmill, well, don't have a windmill. Design something different to hide it in the side of your house, man. Modify the side of your house to let wind cut through to the basement and use the doggone basement as a squirrel cage and put your generator inside there. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Be a Rotocola solar Stirling engine. It's a self-starter and just uses the sun. And because it is one of the very, very few Stirling engines that are a self-starter and doesn't take much heat, a low temperature differential, it is ideal for pumping. I'm going to make me one of those. I'm also going to put one and use it as a solar tracker, or as a, what do they call it, a heliostat. So, as the sun moves and the sun starts hitting some of the cans on one side of the deal, that side will start warming up and it'll turn the solar panels back into the sun a little bit, and it'll be self-adjusting by just by the sunlight.
What's that little deal that has the, I can't remember the name of it, that has the black plate on one side and a white plate on the other? It's like a light bulb?
Radiometer. Or some people just can't figure it out, so they call it a sun mill. It's, that name has caught on quite a bit.
The radiometer.
I've got one of my... I featured one on one of my videos as well.
I've been meaning to buy me one of those because I'm fascinated with that thing and actually how it works. I'm wondering.
I'll tell you what, I'll package the thing up and send it to you.
Cool.
And you can go dizzy all day long and your hair will go blonde and all that. And just go blonde.
Well, I'll tell you, when I got my first Stirling engine off of eBay out there, I sat there and played with that thing for days, man. Fascinating. It's one.
If I haven't seen it or done anything with it for at least a year, then I don't need it. And, you know, it's been like 5 years sitting up in the window in my bedroom, and I ain't touched it or even thought about it.
Is it still turning?
Oh, I'm sure. Every day the sun hits it, that sucker starts spinning.
Well, that's amazing. Well, see, you know, I know that the sun comes up and the sun goes down, and so... They say that, solar power is not efficient. Well, I totally, 150,000% disagree with that because of the fact that when the sun's up, they work amazing. Alright? And if you could actually get down to the actual light spectrum, the portion of the sun light that actually causes the solar panel to function, and you knew exactly which one of the light spectrums was actually creating the effect inside the solar panel, you could make a solar panel that would work in the dark. You know, because they say light is heat and heat is light, vice versa, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's according to their own rules. Now, if that's the case, then that means that every spectrum of light is the equivalent of some heat. Am I wrong? So, is it a thermal reaction going on inside the solar panel, or is it photon reaction going on inside the solar panel? In which case, if it's coming from the light, and the light's carrying the photons, then which spectrum are they riding on?
Well, if you cool your solar panel, it works better, so it's definitely not the thermal energy, but it's the photons.
And I don't know about that, Muddy, because thermal energy, like a thermal couple or a thermal pile, there is a limitation to how hot you can get it. They have a sweet spot in there to where, you know, you get that, you get the voltage, the max voltage out of it, but if you get it any hotter, then the reaction stops for some reason.
That's because the other end's getting hotter. You got to be able to take that energy off it. It's the temperature differential. The farther you go in
potential depth. Differential.
So if you keep the thermal potential couple difference. Cool, you could probably get more voltage out of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of interesting.
You know, I seen, when I was a kid, I was reading a book, and it was a Boy Scout book. It was kind of like the old ham radio books. They actually told, you know, anybody in ham radio back then actually built their radios. They didn't order them. Now they got them synthesized output, and it's got so many chips, and you'd have to go to school for 4 years to learn how to work on one. You used to be able to take one of your old little transistor radios. This is when they were first breaking into transistors and getting away from tubes, and things were low power. They showed a bunch of twisted wire. And each sets of twisted wires, and they were all put into where one end was on the inside, and they went around in a circle, and then they kept on going around, and it basically had a column in the middle where one end of the wires were there, and on the outside it was just cooling. So it kind of looked like one of them round hair brushes with a hole in the middle, and you just set it over a candle, and it would run your radio.
Yeah, I remember seeing those.
Yep, and they told you how to make it and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it was black and white drawings and stuff, but it was good reading.
Because when you heat it up, it changed the metal to where one side was magnetic because of it, but the temperature changed the metal and caused it to turn.
Right, and some people think, it's the junction. It's not the junction. So they say, oh, well, I'd make one, but I don't know how to join copper and nickel silver wire or whatever you want to use. You have to have two different metals. One metal gets negative on the heated side and positive towards the other end, and the other metal does the opposite. So you just get these pairs and you twist them together, and you join them at one end, and at the other end you just spread them just a little bit and start hooking them up in series like batteries, and then until you get your column of all these wires set up, and just light the candle, and the candle's in the middle, and it's not hot enough to melt your solder. And they said to solder them, so you can do that. That's not a problem. People think it's the junction, and it's not the junction. It has nothing to do with it. So,
well,
thanks to the wire.
Some of the nifty gizmos that they had back in the day, you know, I'm kind of liking this these little physics toy videos that I've been doing here recently. I'm actually working on a
videos.
I'm actually working on an ion drive boat. What do you think of that?
Oh, that'd be cool. I know one that you need to do, man. That deal there where you take a paper clip and a piece of cork or something, and you put it inside the 2-liter bottle, and you can keep adding salt to the water until it adjusts out right, or just how much cork you have. When you squeeze the bottle, it'll go down to the bottom.
Oh yeah, I've seen those too. Those are pretty cool.
And you let off it. You get that bottle just right. People cannot see you doing it, and you play the mind control thing where you point at it and raise it to the top and then lower it to the bottom. And they say, you try it. When you watch people just strain their eyebrows and all that stuff, it's hilarious. So that's a great toy.
Well, one YouTuber out there actually made a game with one where you actually use that little hook to go down and pick up the little things that have a loop on them, and then it bring it up to the top. And
yeah, and leaning the bottle don't help because the water shifts. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a monotonous fun thing.
Well, either way, you know, a lot of those old toys right there were, you know, great examples of some different physics that if you actually really sit back and think about, you know, like the Stirling engine, for example, that's amazing. I mean, it works off of a temperature difference. The heat expands, and then at some point exhausts that heat and brings in cool air, which causes it to contract and go back down. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But those are, you know, little concepts that could be so much further expanded on. I mean, I do remember seeing a video where a guy made a huge Stirling engine. You know, he turned it into a generator.
You know, yeah.
Basically a wood-burning version of it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to do. I had two hot water heaters. One was smaller than the other, and I was going to use one for the inside can, the other one. And I was going to use a hub spindle and bearing from a car and just put the whole tire and rim on there for the flywheel. Wood-burning stove at the bottom and put the hot cap in the bottom towards the top of the stove. And yeah. But I just found out I had too many irons in the fire, and the yard needed to be cleaned up, so I opted to just get money for it at the scrapyard.
Well,
I had a lot of trouble finding just the right heaters, hot water heaters, too. The main deal is most of those hot water heaters, they use that expanding foam to insulate them. And man, I tell you what, scraping all of that off of there. Now, I started one when I was in Virginia, but when I cut the top off, it's not that the size changed; it's the shape of it. It wanted to go into an egg shape instead of round. And man, I'd have to cut the perfect size circle and all that stuff and some plywood and then slide it all the way up that thing and get it to the top before I'd start welding again.
Well, maybe you ought to come down to my area and find some of the older versions of hot water heaters, different size, because the older styles had like fiberglass insulation around them instead of the expanding foam like the newer ones.
Well, I also learned, yeah, that'd be nice. I also learned that when I made the tin can Stirling engine, my idea was just to make it tough so if you dropped it, it didn't hurt it, you know, because I made one out of those, what do they call them, energy drinks that had the Red Bull.
Yeah.
I made one out of there. Man, the thing worked great. And I left it out in the car. It got cool at night, and the displacer collapsed because the air inside it was sealed so perfect. And the air inside it collapsed.
Man, that stinks.
Yeah.
Well,
anything would go up and down without hearing just scrape, you know.
Steven typed in the word nitinol in the chat room down there. Nitinol is a memory metal, and for those of you out there who want a source of nitinol, you can go to like everything a dollar store and buy one of them cheapo doggone. Thermometers, outside thermometers. I got a little piece of nitinol in my hand. It's all coiled up, and basically,
that's not nitinol. That's memory.
Yeah, I mean, it's memory metal, right?
That's bimetal. One metal contracts quicker than the other, and they're basically laminated onto each other.
No quicker.
This one right here is you heat it up, and you can actually get it to go out completely straight.
Wow.
And then whenever you let the heat off of it, it will retract. So I'm positive that this is nitinol. It's the memory metal like what he's talking about in there.
Nitinol is nickel and titanium.
Right. It's a mixture of nickel and titanium, and it's not two pieces of metal fused together. It's just one metal, and it shrinks and pulls really hard.
Well, whatever the case may be, it's still functioning pretty much the same way. You heat it up, and it stretches out, If you actually take a look at how those thermometers work inside there when they get hot, is basically there's one on your car too that opens and closes a flap on your exhaust when it gets to a certain temperature. So,
yes,
the technology is not new. The materials are newer, but basically, when you heat this thing up, it'll stretch out. It'll go all the way straight out. And then whenever you take the heat off of it, it'll coil itself right back up. It's a pretty impressive deal. But
That's the EFI valve.
Yeah. So you could actually build a system that had some heat on one side, and then like the drinking bird concept that Raymond talks about all the time. Whenever this thing stretches out, it'll dip the other end into some cold water or something like that and cause it to start coiling back up, back and forth. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. Either way, it's pretty cool. And a long time ago, they used to have this little toy that was around Christmas time. I don't know if it's more like a toy as opposed to a Christmas display. I don't know. Maybe you've seen these before, Muddy. It was like a little carousel that had little angels that hung at the bottom of it, but it had a little turbine at the top of it, and you put a candle underneath there, and as the heat's rising, it caused the little carousel to spin around in circles.
Right, the Chinese make some really intricate ones, but those things scare me. I mean, you got 7 to 8 candles all around the thing, and all that heat is passing upward up to them blades across all them fine balsa wooden figurines, and oh my goodness, you know, you put a candle on your table and you put your hand over it. Oh, you feel it in the center of your palm, makes you pull your hand back, so you go a little higher. And if you hold it there and the wind, there's no breeze in the room and you're not breathing on it, you can get your hand up there about a foot and a half and it'll still burn the center of your palm. Because that tunneling effect that heat just rises in one column.
Well, I'm saying practice safety, obviously, but it's cool the effect that you get. You know heat rises, and you know that when cool air is falling and heat's rising, you get a spinning effect. So that's how basically how a tornado works or whatever.
Snowflakes.
Yeah. And so, you know, with that said, it's still one of many anomalies that, you know, you could use. Like, you know, you had mentioned a while back about the Stirling engines that you set on top of your wood-burning stove. So you can actually hook a fan to the top of your wood burning stove that basically just uses the heat and the heat rising could turn that, or you can actually use that same concept of the little Christmas ornament that spun around for the heat rising as well.
Oh, such a nice present. Look, oh, it's so beautiful, and it burnt my house down.
Well, we don't want to advocate nobody burning their house down. That's a terrible thing. But if you're going to be burning the wood anyway, then you might as well get the most efficiency out of that wood as possible. Heating your water, cooking your food, and generating some electricity all in one shot. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And if you got a Stirling engine fan that's circulating the air through the room, hey, that's a, you know, you don't have to have an electric fan to do it. But you could use like the Peltier elements like that to actually generate and charge up batteries for lighting. So you could be using all the energy that comes from burning that wood to doing all the functions that you need in your house. Right, and then the next thing is that if you had a collection system for the waste that comes off of your wood burning stove, there's like 10 different things you can do with wood ash and the creosote that builds up in your doggone chimney. Clean that out, store that up. That stuff right there, it's a good fuel source as well. You see what I mean?
Yep.
So there's no such thing as wasted energy unless you just don't utilize it. That's what I'm saying. The materials that you burn, when you turn around, all you're doing is changing the doggone chemistry of it. Now you can make lye soap and stuff to get, like if your car gets stuck in your driveway, go out there and spread some wood ash under the tire. You'll get traction. Why is that? Anybody?
Because you're not sliding on a layer of water on top of the ice.
It's pretty amazing. I got a 65-passenger bus out of a snowdrift with wood ash.
Yep.
Yeah, it works. But that my point about the whole deal is, if you wanted to make a self-contained house, that everything in that house, if you started off from start to finish, and Jermaine, you'd be the best one to do this because you're still young. You still live with your parents?
Yep.
Okay, so someday you go out, you buy you a piece of land, and you build a totally self-contained house. Build it yourself to, from start to finish. You if you bring the thing down, like start off with a 12-volt or a 20-volt system, that so you don't need very much energy to run it, all right? And you could have AC inverters for things like computers and stuff like that or whatever, but... You could build this house from start to finish to be so super efficient where you're circulating water through a tubing system that goes through your floor and up around your roof where it gets hot, and then so you got a constant circulation of hot water going through your entire house, and so the heat rises from the floor, so you don't have to worry about the floor ever getting cold. The heat being transferred off of the roof going down through there, you could heat the water in your hot water heater for your showers. And so there's one deal right there. Insulation factor of the house, you could have that thing, the R factor so good on that, where it'd be like a thermos, you know. If you want it cold inside, it'll stay cold. If you want it hot inside, it'll stay hot, vice versa. And using everything that nature has to offer, from wind power to solar power, you could make a completely self-contained house that you'd never have to pay any electric bill or any fuel bill whatsoever. And if you did need any kind of heat source, you could build an outside wood stove that at the same time would compensate for those days when the sun wasn't out. You see what I mean? Yeah, no?
Yeah.
I think your most efficient heat storage is really extreme salt water.
Well, there's another thing, the different materials. You know which materials will retain, heat. Like, I give the example during the summertime. One day, when I was younger, I had a pair of shorts on. We just all went swimming and everything like that, and we've been out all day long. It started getting dark, and so we decided we were going to head on down the road. And so I jump in the back of the pickup truck and set on this old spare tire back there. Well, that spare tire had been out in the sun all day long. Man, that thing roasted my biscuits the moment I sat down on that thing. Telling you. You'd be surprised how long a spare tire will stay hot.
I'll tell you another thing that'll hold a lot of heat. I mean, and this is very, very useful. I used to have a pair of coveralls or overalls. I mean, they were pretty thermal and stuff. I worked at the 76 truck stop as the head fueler, and I did 12-hour shifts 6 days a week. And I think it was 72 hours. I ain't even going to try the math. It's too early. I haven't had my 20th cup of coffee yet. Huh. But anyway, it got cold out there at night, and especially towards the morning. So I put potatoes in the wood stove wrapped in the aluminum foil, and one in front of one of them natural gas heaters there right up against it. And I'd get up in the middle of the night to go use the restroom, and I'd turn that thing around and, I mean, in the middle of the day, and then roll it over and go use the restroom and go back to bed. And as soon as my alarm went off and the sun started going down, I'd grab them things and throw them in an oven bag and stuff two in my right pocket, two in my left pocket. My fingers never got froze because I'd stick my, while I was waiting for a truck to fuel, I'd stick my hands back in there. Come around lunchtime at night, man, I'd pull one out, and if somebody else was hungry, I'd pull another one out, and I'd take the other two and go take the foil off them and put them in the microwave in the kitchen, and then put them right back in the two separate bags and stuff them back in my pocket. And I tell you what, that will keep your core nice and warm the whole shift. And by the end of the shift in the morning, you know, they weren't so hot that you couldn't eat them without burning your lips and stuff and tongue. So,
well, that same concept that you're talking about, are you familiar with the term sad iron?
Man, that sounds familiar.
Well, back in like the old days, they used to have this thing called a sad iron. And it looked kind of like an iron, but it basically probably could use it for ironing clothes too. But they would heat these things up in the, on the wood stove, and then they'd wrap them in like a some sort of cotton or something like that, and or wool or whatever, and they'd put them at the foot of their bed underneath the blankets. And that would hold heat for a long time. Keep the bed warm. That's before.
Oh, yeah, then. Man. I've taken 2-liter bottles and fill them up with water and just put a little dent in them. And you put them in the microwave, or you just go ahead and boil your water and let it cool down a little bit so that when you put it in the 2-liter jug. I got so many 2-liter jugs that are smaller than they were originally from putting too hot of water in. But you don't want to get that water up to boiling, so that's why I dent them just a little bit. When the dents start to come out, you turn the microwave off and you wait about 3 minutes. And if you shake it, you might still get a little expansion, so it's not a good idea. So you put the cap on nice and tight, and do not walk away from the microwave. You don't want that thing to start turning into a big balloon. But anyway, yeah, you take that, then you take a full bath towel, and you put the cap towards one edge of it, the long edge, and you roll it all the way down. And then when you get to the end, you fold it up on the side, and you start pulling that first little flap up and put it even where it starts, and then you just keep yanking up around the outside to pull the rest of it out of the spiral, and you get a double layer that locks, and it will not come unwrapped. Now, it's heavy, but if you don't have a heater in your van or something like that, and your van just, I mean, you got nothing but wall, metal wall, and you're going down the road, and it's bleeding any heat that you got in that van out anyway. But you got that inside your shirt. I tell you what, you're glad to have the extra wrappings of that towel. And as it starts to cool, I mean, that thing will hold heat for a long time. And as it starts getting cooler, and you figure you need more heat, you just start pulling the wrap back down a little bit by little bit. That will keep you warm for 2 hours on a nice 2-hour trip.
The significance about all this, what we're talking about, is the fact that if you know you can store that heat energy, you can any version of energy, it doesn't matter, you know, you can store it and reuse it later. So, you know, like just like solar, I don't know why they say solar panels are, you know, not reliable, because the sun's not always out. Well, if you know the sun's not always out, when it is out, you take advantage of it, and then you take advantage of the wind, whatever, everything that nature's doing, you're storing that energy in battery banks or even large capacitor banks for that matter. And I'm positive that at some point our battery technology, if it isn't already there, and our capacitor technology is going to get so amazing that these things are going to get smaller and smaller. You know, Robert Murray Smith has been doing a lot of research on different batteries. He's done things on graphene, and now he's working on some hemp batteries that are outperforming other major batteries on the market. And so, with that said, you know, the size of these batteries and the storage capacity are going to get smaller. You won't need a giant, you know, bank of old car batteries or something like that. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
Actually using the body of the piece of machinery that you're running as the storage, kind of like a car that run off of a pneumatic engine, you know, an air motor or whatever, using the frame of the car for the air compressor tank. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, they go fill up with the, they go ahead and fill up the tank underneath, you know, right in front of the back wheels and underneath. They fill that thing up on some of these little golf cart sized deals for the warehouse. They just go by there and the things are totally silent. They don't do nothing. I mean, until you touch the pedal, there ain't no starting it or turning it on and off. It's nothing but a pneumatic switch. And, man, they'll tootle around all over the warehouse there for like 2 or 3 hours, and then go. And when it starts getting too slow, they just go ahead and re-up with air. So
yeah, just compressed air, man.
Yeah, they call it. They say it's very efficient. There's no. It's not like it's got any waste heat, because when the pressure is relieved, it actually makes the pneumatic motor cold.
Yep. So, well, and there's another physics deal right there. When you compress gas and let it expand rapidly, you get a cooling effect. So that's pretty amazing. Another one of the anomalies that could be utilized. You know, going from hot to cold real fast.
Yep.
So, you know, I've said it a million and one times. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. Now,
that brought me to an idea. If I put a wind turbine blade up there of a decent size, and, you know, if you double the prop, you get 4 times the power, and if the wind doubles, you get 8 times the power. So you can wind up with 32 times the power on a nice windy day if it's hot, and you just had that tube coming down. That tube would bleed off all the heat that it took to generate it on its way down. When it got to the bottom and you let it come out the orifice and expand, you can just have that just a fine jet down inside, say, something like a pallet palace, and it would be your air conditioning.
Well, since you're really good with wind turbines, what is it that goes wrong that actually causes some of them doggone windmills, and, you know, those giant windmills that you see out there on wind farms, what is it that actually goes wrong that causes them things to catch on fire?
Maybe the blades didn't furl, and like I said, you know, if the prop is doubled and the wind speed is doubled, that's 32 times the power. You've got to design these things for what kind of wind you're going to be dealing with, and on a you're dealing with 8 times the power, maybe your windings get a little hot, and maybe the bearings weren't greased good, and maybe the blades froze. Those blades twist their angle.
What in the heck is that?
That's a... anyway, the blades change their angle so that they'll spin slower. But it usually has something to do with the furling mechanism. That's why I like the automatic furling mechanism.
But is it a wire fire because of it's generating too much heat? Or is it a wire fire because it's generating too much electricity?
Too much heat and too many RPM on the gear up system. And, I like the automatic gravity-governed furling mechanism because they do not fail.
So what would stop you from putting, like, an emergency water jacket on there in case the wind power got up too high? And once the wind power got up too high, it would actually kick in a clutch that would start circulating water through that thing to cool it back down.
It's not that. It's pretty much, you know, when you're on the inside of that merry-go-round, you don't feel that centrifugal force as much. But when you get to the outside, if you're not ready for it and you're traveling towards the outside, next thing you know, you can't even hang on enough. The same thing with them. Them blades are pretty long, and those tip speed ratios are going 4.5 times the speed of the wind. They look like you're going slow, but that's a heck of a diameter.
Well,
that's a lot of weight, you know, and if you don't govern it with some kind of a furling mechanism, then the things will overspeed and self-destruct, regardless of how cool or how hot.
Well, then why can't you do what you're familiar with, the centrifugal clutch, right? Like they use on go-karts?
Right.
Well, you can adjust the spring tensions on them centrifugal clutches to begin to kick on at certain RPMs.
And friction equals heat.
Yeah, well, when that centrifugal clutch kicks on, it will actually gear that doggone thing down to run slower no matter how windy it is outside.
Right. The main deal would be to change the angle of the blades. You know, some of the old water pump and windmills out here, actually, you've seen an Indian headdress, right? Yeah, you know, the feathers go back. Some of these water pump and windmills actually had the blades do that. They were set on a spring tension, and as they got to spinning too fast, the total weight of it would hinge the blades to where they went back like an Indian headdress.
Oh.
And it's a great purling mechanism. The main deal is, it's kind of like drinking water from a water hose. And you got it in your mouth and it's sealed real good and you turn the faucet and whoops, that's too much. It doesn't matter how much resistance you got for closing the back of your throat, but I tell you what, you can damage your throat. And you find out it's way too much and that thing comes shooting out your mouth real quick. It's not better to harness the energy and then try to slow it down and heat things up with friction. It's better to govern how much you're collecting. In other words, drink the water slow, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's okay to harness energy, but when you're harnessing too much and your mechanism is not designed to handle that much energy, then it's time to find a way to make sure that it's not going to collect that much.
Well, on the storing heat portion of the deal, Stephen Gibbons typed in there, McDonald's apple pie, if you could get the recipe, those things hold heat for days.
I've burnt my lip on them things before.
Well, them microwave burritos, I had a big old blister on my jaw one time because the hot cheese dripped out and scalded my chin.
Yeah, they got to find a different way of heating them things or limit the timer on that microwave or whatever. They really have to. They try to do it all quick, and I've had one of them microwave burritos that were frozen at one end and hot at the other. So, yeah, a little bit slower, and maybe on a carousel, so it would actually, because you got points where the microwaves converge and the heat's hotter in one spot than another. If you keep them things moving, it'd be better.
Well, my suggestion is just proceed caution and sit there and let it cool down to room temperature before you eat it or something.
On top of that, you know, the microwaves destroy the structure of the water, and it actually affects your body and does more damage. It does the food. Yeah, you're hungry and you got to eat and you need to take in energy. But tell you what, when you ruin the structure of the water, you're getting less out of it than you would have if you didn't eat the stupid thing. So,
well, speaking of ruining structure of water, last few days I've been looking into something. Because, you know that green stuff that gets on the top of your ponds and causes your pond to basically clog
algae.
Up?
Algae.
Well, it's called, doggone it, what is it called? It's called duckweed. Those little floating things, that's what they call it. Well, I got a couple ponds on my property that basically the herring clean. What goes on here? This is how it happens. There's a bird out there called a herring, and those birds, when they find a pond, if they can get fish out of them, they will keep coming back to that pond until they clean every doggone fish out of that pond. All right? So herrings are terrible on ponds. They will come back and they will pick your pond clean. Well,
fish
once
is still on herrings.
Once the herring picks that pond clean, then there's no more fish in there. And so what I thought was a problem is an unlimited supply of fish food that is in the pond, because like the perch will eat the duckweed, the ducks will eat duckweed, chickens will eat duckweed, people can actually eat duckweed, you just don't want to eat it raw because it has little fibers on there that cause you excruciating pain, and I can't remember what they call the problem with that, but you got to cook it, and they say it tastes terrible. But it's high in nutrients because what duckweed does is it takes all the doggone nutrients out of the water. And then they're really good with nitrogen. I mean, they're really packed with nitrogen. And so if you pull this duckweed out and you put it on your garden, your garden will get all the nitrogen it needs out of the duckweed. You can actually dehydrate the duckweed and turn it into flaked fish food for your fish for your aquaponic systems. There are people out there who actually sell duckweed to other people who want to grow duckweed so that they can use them in their aquaponic system, because essentially you've got an unlimited supply of fish food. And so what I normally thought was a terrible thing, I found out there are so many different uses for it. It's just crazy, and the stuff grows, you know, rapidly. But if you got carp in there, carp will eat duckweed. Most fish out there will eat duckweed. The doggone ducks will eat it. The chickens will eat it. And
so yeah, there's weed for the birds.
Yeah, well, it's yeah, but the whole
hydroponic weed too.
The whole thing is what would normally be something that was obnoxious to people because it ruins your pond, it, you know, clogs up your pond. Well, the only reason why it's even there like that is because there ain't no fish in there to, you know, to clean it out. You know, you put grass carp in there for like rooted plants. Grass carp will eat any soft rooted plants that you know can get out of control in your pond. So if you want to keep your pond clean, you put a couple different versions of carp and some little not the bluegill, the perch inside there, and they'll keep the doggone thing clean. Plus, if you like bass, the bass will have food because they'll eat the perch. You know, you got to balance it out like nature does, but. Either way, that was something I found out, and also here in Missouri, there's they call them hedge apples, some call them horse apples, the wood is called like Missouri orange or hedge wood.
Hedge oranges.
Yeah, well, those are something else that were, by me at least, considered to be obnoxious, because once they fall off the tree, what do you do with them? Well, some people make you know, natural bug repellents with it. There's a guy out there who's collecting them up, and he takes the seeds and he's making this oil out of it that is good for like a beauty cream or something like that. But
yeah, he seems to be thrilled with the taste of it, though.
No, but I have seen people eat them, but they say it's, once again, tastes terrible. But deer. They don't eat the actual fruit of the hedge apple. They want the seeds. And so, you know, that's what they... Basically, when you see them rotting on the deal, when the deer are chewing on them, they're trying to get to the seeds. But either way, there's a... Once again, there's something that would normally be, you know, considered to be obnoxious or, you know, waste or whatever. I had never knew about duckweed until I decided I wanted to get rid of duckweed. Alright, now I don't want to get rid of duckweed because I understand that with that duckweed growing over there, I got an unlimited supply of fish food for my fish in my good pond.
And nitrogen for your garden.
Yeah, nitrogen for my garden. So, these are things that, you know, every day's a learning experience out here. There's so many different resources out there for so many different things, for alternative energy, alternative food sources, and medicine and stuff. Folks, if we could actually get our act together, man, we could literally take this, what is already a self-contained thermoelectric generator, epic biosphere of epic proportions... This thing has everything that we need, and then some. If we turn around and learn how to harness the energy that nature's already provided and working in harmony with nature, you know, you can grow up that duckweed and take care of a whole lot of things all in one shot, which would normally turn a pond into a wasteland that frogs and turtles and crawdads will thrive in, but, you know... You can't handle fish in there. It's too plugged up. There's no... It steals the oxygen out of it. But the right amount of it in there is good because it puts oxygen in it. See what I'm saying?
Yup. I bet you can make some nice fuel from that nitrogen, too.
Well, yeah, I bet you could. There's probably so many more uses to it that... And I wish Thomas was on here because he's good with chemistry. He'd probably know a ton of different things that you could use... duckweed for. But, you know, there's people out there trying to, you know, they're actually paying people to try to figure out, you know, how to get the doggone pond cleaned up. They skim this stuff off, you know. And there's guys out there that sell this for about $5 for one little fish net full of it. So, there's a market in the duckweed, man. There's a market in the hedge apples. Everything out there that nature... There's so many multiple uses for every single thing out there. It's just crazy. So if you can't find free energy, once again, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. Because That duckweed out there is a carbon-based biological fuel right there, man. If you can dry it out, it'll burn. You see what I mean? What do you get when you burn it? That's a good question. That'd be something worth looking into. And as far as, basically being able to store heat and stuff like that, have you ever really seriously took a look at the inside of an electric stove, at the elements inside of an electric stove? Anybody?
Yeah, you talking about in the oven?
Yeah. Well, what I didn't know until one of them actually failed was that there's a ceramic on the outside of a metal that has a lower melting temperature. And so essentially when you turn your 220 stove on, that heating element basically has a dead short, and it heats up that metal and causes it to liquefy inside that ceramic, which is sealed.
And I've got sparks shooting out of my oven. That was funny.
Yeah. Well, listen to this. As long as that ceramic is still sealed and not broken, then everything's fine. Well, yeah. If you get so much as a nick in that ceramic that liquid metal can start dripping out, that thing will catch on fire. And the sparks that you probably got, I'm not sure whether or not it was completely,
Everything melted in three places and fell apart. That's great.
Well, either way, if you put an energy in that takes resistance to basically cause that metal to liquefy inside there, then you could also, in reverse, heat that element from the outside to the inside, and that thing would retain heat. If you understand what it is I'm trying to say here, you could put these down in the bottom of your wood stove, and they wouldn't be like directly in the heat, but what they would be doing is like in my wood stoves, I always get some about quarter to half inch steel plates, and I put them underneath down at the bottom down there along the sides on top of the fire bricks, so that whenever the wood is burning, it will heat up those steel plates so that long after the wood goes out, you still have that heat energy inside that thick plate of steel. You see what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that brings something to mind. When I had my cab company out there in the shop, I had a wood stove. It was a little small sucker. So we had 76 by 36 feet to heat. So the only warm spot was pretty much near the wood stove. Every now and then we'd take a Coke can and we'd fill it up about halfway with used tranny fluid, which burns very hot. Now we'd stick that and we'd reach in with the tongs and set it right in the middle of the coals and add a few pieces of wood around it. That would ensure that it would actually catch the wood and keep the wood going. And man, I tell you what, man, you'd look in there for that can and the can was gone. And you know that ash? Man, coals can go for up to 3 days if they're covered with the ash.
Yeah.
That's great insulation. So here's the point. When I went out there and I cleaned the wood stove out, there was this huge slab of cast aluminum down in the bottom. And all the ash and pieces of charcoal and stuff like that were stuck to the very top of it. Not in it, because it was float, because it's lighter than the aluminum. So what we wound up with a pure slab of aluminum down in the bottom, which would hold a lot of heat, and the ash would keep it from going out the flue, and it would actually radiate the heat off the bottom.
Yeah, and so, there's another trick that has to do with radiated heat too. If you can afford it, and you put a copper plate in front of your wood stove, that copper plate would help to disperse that heat evenly across the floor. Do you know that?
No, I didn't know that. But the thing was, I learned not to take that aluminum slab out of the bottom. And it just got thicker and thicker. And I finally cashed the thing in when the spring comes. So.
Well, see, there you go, man.
It was about a can per day. So, yeah, it was quite a heavy slab. It worked well for evening the heat out.
So properly designed, even if you were going to burn firewood, instead of and for folks out there that think burning firewood's a bad idea, go out there and find any piece of land that's overgrown. and see what's going on out there. Actually walk around and see how many trees are rotted and fell over. And, you know, when a lightning storm, I call lightning nature's tree trimmer. Because if a place gets overgrown and gets struck by lightning, that, you know, if nature will burn it off and then go back after the fire has been burned off for a while and watch, look and see how much better that land looks. It's impressive. You know, what would normally be a disaster if you're living in a, you know, a wooded area and you get a forest fire, that's a terrible thing for you. But for nature, that's just nature cleaning house, man.
Because all your grass turns are rich green.
Yeah.
Deer and all that stuff. And on the other point there, I've heard somebody talk about, oh man, we got to get rid of these wood stoves and stuff because basically it's putting carbon into the atmosphere and ruining our environment. Well, the fact is, if you're going to heat your house with electricity, you've lost efficiencies before you've got it, and you've contributed to global warming more than you would if you burned wood. That's number one. Number two, the carbon that goes out, they tell you to have your flue up there. It's got to be up there at least somewhere around 10 foot above your roof. Because once it gets out there, you notice if you don't have a real tall flue, you wind up getting the smoke back in your house. Well, that tells me that once it gets out there, it's a heavy carbon and it wants to go down.
Yeah.
It's still warmer than the air around. How come it isn't going up? No, it comes down and goes back into the ground. And you talk about some healthy tree growth around you. You're contributing to the environment.
Pay attention how many times you see during the summertime, how many times you see the mowers out alongside the road. You know, because, you know, I've been saying this for so many years, it just drives me insane every time I hear about global warming / climate change / climate disruption or whatever they're going to call it next week when the numbers don't add up. Well, carbon is what the doggone plants turn into sugar for food.
And so, what carbon-based do you use?
Yeah, and so if it was going up in the air, what are these plants like Michael Jordan or something, they're jumping up in the air and nabbing it out of the air or whatever? It's a joke, man. CO2 is nothing more than two oxygen atoms connected to one carbon atom, which makes it heavier than oxygen. It displaces oxygen. Carbon monoxide is one oxygen atom connected to one carbon atom, which is heavier than oxygen, so it displaces oxygen. See, carbon monoxide is more dangerous to you because if you breathe it in, the molecule is smaller and it can fit in your respiratory system and cause you poison. You get carbon monoxide poisoning. Well, carbon dioxide, which is a larger molecule, will actually cause you to suffocate because it'll push all the oxygen out of your lungs because it's heavier. It's sinking to the bottom of your lungs.
Which makes more plants, which makes more oxygen.
Yeah.
Nature is a balance. You know, we were meant to burn wood for heat. We were meant for a lot of things. You know, and they want to give you this carbon tax. That's the biggest hockahooey I ever heard.
Well, it's theft. It's flat out stealing from people with false science.
Right. False science.
I figured this out when I was 9 years old, man. Back whenever they started talking about this whole freaking climate change and stuff, man. I sat there and I explained it to my mom about this whole deal. I said, well, you know, if CO2 is heavier than oxygen, and at 10,000 feet, that's as high as you can go without supplemental oxygen. How in the heck is it oxygen magically going up there where how is carbon dioxide magically going up there where oxygen can't? You know, does it defy the laws of physics? Is it see-through on one side because it's able to trap UV rays in as opposed to blocking them out? So every time there's a volcano eruption, we go through a cooling cycle. Why is that?
Cool.
It's blocking out the sunlight.
Right.
It ain't being trapped in. It's impossible for it to be trapped in.
Yeah, why did they say it's going to turn us into an ice age because of the global warming? You know, no. Everything's balanced out, and nature has a way of taking care of its own. Just like if you eat honey from New York, it's not going to do you near as much good as the local honey from where you live, because that'll give you immunities for what's in your area. The same thing, when I was a kid, we never heard about the ozone levels and warnings. Stay inside today if you have respiratory. You know, forget that. And here we got holes in the ozone. Oh no, we're losing our ozone. That's going to create global warming. And they want money from you to sit there so they can correct it. How are they going to correct it? Are they playing with Tesla coils to sit there and make some ozone? No. But the Earth, you'll notice that if the ozone layer depletes, next thing we got thunderstorms and the lightning comes down and makes lots of ozone.
Yep, sure does.
It balances out on its own. The same thing with that duckweed stuff.
And ironically enough, man, answer this question here. Anybody, tell me whether are you going to get a sunburn faster standing out in the middle of a grass field or out there in the middle of a lake on a boat?
On a cloudy day on a boat. Serious.
Well, my point is this. This water reflects the sunlight, man. You know, that's why, you know, the water's usually cooler than the air outside of it. You know, it's like a good giant mirror. And so when you're out on that doggone boat and the sun's overhead, you're going to get baked, right? Whereas, you know, when you're standing in the grass is going to absorb some of that doggone heat. You know what I mean? It's not reflecting back up underneath your nose. Try it. Go out there and see if the tip of your nose doesn't get burnt when you're sitting out there fishing on a boat.
Oh, yeah.
It's aggravating.
If you're mowing lawns, you better be wearing a cap.
Yeah.
And don't put it on backwards. And I always put mine on backwards, but, you know, I'm looking down a little bit and my nose don't get too burnt, but you know, the cap is nice, but I put mine on backwards so when I go under trees I can actually see the branches that are scraping my face. So, and then I put my protective eyewear on, definitely. I will not mow a lawn or weed eat without a ball cap and the goggles.
Well, here's the thing. Even with the way that the catalytic converter reburns fuel in the car, you could actually design a similar system, which they do actually have a similar system. It's called a double barrel wood burning stove.
Yeah, gasification.
Yeah, and so you could actually get cleaner, you know, you could design a wood stove to where it'd have perfectly clean exhaust coming out of it. Plus, you know, whatever soot did build up in there, you can take and turn around and use that for fuel.
Oh, the rocket mass stove heater.
Yeah. So for every one of the negatives that they want to throw out there as far as the alternative energy community, if this stuff was engineered properly, man, you'd be surprised at what you could do. Alright? My deal is I want to take electricity, which we know how electricity is generated these days, right? Now, what is electricity? Whether it's high voltage or low voltage, high current, with amperage and wattage and all that kind of stuff, you know, what is the actual energy force that you get shocked from? What is the actual energy that we call electricity? And can you speed it up? Can you slow it down? Can you store it and back it up? Just like you do water, right? If you can understand plumbing, you can understand electricity. You know, if you want to turn your garden hose into something instead of just spraying out a big volume of water, you put this little nozzle on the end of it, which causes a back pressure, which causes the water to jet out further than what would before. Now, you're not getting the same amount of current flow because it's slowing it down. That's the resistance, the same thing that's going on inside electricity. And so with that said, if I can generate any form of electricity, from static electricity to high voltage of any source or whatever, and I can move this energy rapidly into a rapid charging and discharging storage bank, I can turn around and speed that energy up or slow it down to use it wherever I need to use it. You see what I'm saying? if I want volume on the opposite side, I could put a bigger valve on the other side to get the current flow that I need to cause the magnetic field to be strong enough to turn my electric motor. It's still electricity, even though they're calling it static electricity. Even though it's high voltage, low amperage, it's still electricity. Am I wrong?
Nope, you're not wrong at all. Matter of fact, if you got a Wimshurst device, or you make the Lord Kelvin's high voltage generator, which is two buckets, or basically one water source that comes out and splits apart, and they run it and they kind of run it just a little bit faster to where just the stream disappears, and it goes down through two cans. These cans will accept the opposite charge of whatever the water is. And what makes the difference is one of them has to go out of balance. And you've got a wire coming from each of those cans, and it crosses over to metal buckets at the bottom that catches the water. Well, one of them's going to get out of balance, and therefore it's going to make the water in one side charge up a different potential than the other. And you wind up, after just a few minutes, you start watching those water drops starting to spread and fly around all over the place because they're charged. And right about that point, the potential dipper gets up there about 1,000,000 volts and jumps across that gap. Now, the thing is, after it does that, it has to start off all over again, deciding which one's going to be positive and which one's going to be negative. My favorite for doing this is to sit there and take like a 2 mega ohm resistor, 2 mega ohm voltage. Well, you take a 2 mega ohm resistor, and you put that, rather than the gap between there, you put a capacitor after that 2 mega ohm and let that capacitor charge up. And I believe you could, with just adjusting the water, you can sit there and charge your cell phone wonderfully just with the dripping water.
Yeah, well, check this out. I had
Same thing with the Wimshurst device.
I had one of the old-style headlights off of a car. It was burnt out, and I decided I was going to use this old headlight for a vacuum spark gap. And so what I was expecting to get was plasma inside there, because there would be like halogen gas in there, or whatever gases that they used in the old style headlights. But to my surprise, when I fired up that igniter on there to send that energy through there, that light bulb, which was burnt out, which wouldn't work on regular 12-volt electricity anymore, it lit up.
All right? Yeah, it jumped that mini spark gap.
Yeah, well, it jumped the gap inside there, but the tungsten element inside there vibrating so rapidly from the high frequency coming through there actually generated the heat to light that tungsten up, which in turn lit the light bulb itself up. So here was a burnout 12-volt light bulb that was actually producing light, not plasma, light. And so you know that if it's producing light, then it's also producing heat. I got in my hand right now a 12-volt constant duty Beckett oil burner igniter. These things, they take a 12-volt, input is 12-volt DC at 4.8 amps. The output of this thing is 20 kV, 20 kilovolts, peak at 30 milliamps. Okay, so the output on the outside doesn't sound very impressive if you're looking at it as far as trying to run an electric motor, but what it does tell you is that's 20,000 volts, right? 20,000 volts is what I sent through that doggone bulb, and that bulb was able to light up. And so that means it went from what normally would have took 4.8 amps to run this deal right here. That light bulb was running off of 30 milliamps. I want somebody to look up what an actual 12-volt headlamp with a high beam and low beam actually take to run.
45 watts on the low beam and 55 watts on the high beam.
How many amps does it take to run one of those?
Well, you figure your 13.8 divided by
your wattage divided by the voltage to give you your amps, and that'll also figure out to find out what the resistance of the...
Is it more or less than 30 milliamps?
I don't know. Let me go ahead and punch my numbers in, and I will let you know.
Because if it's less than 30 milliamps, I could be wrong. But if it's if it takes more than 30 milliamps to run that light bulb, yet I was able to run that light bulb, and it was bright, too.
I would get it to go brighter than it ever did.
Yeah. So, while he's doing the math on that, there are Eden Pure heaters out there that have a tungsten element that is surrounded by a quartz tube. And so what I'm thinking is that if I hit this with the right frequency, I can actually vibrate that tungsten element inside that quartz tube enough to cause that doggone thing to heat up. When that tungsten element heats up, it'll heat that quartz out, and supposedly these will produce infrared heat. You see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And so, normally the wattage that was on this doggone heater that I pulled these particular elements out of is 900 watts. And if I can run it off of, instead of 900 watts, run it off of 12 volt DC at 4.8 amps, I'd say that that would probably be a pretty interesting deal there, wouldn't you?
You wind up with 0.95 amps. Just under 1 amp.
So, it's less than 30 milliamps.
Isn't that... No, what the bulb actually uses when it's in your car is just less than an amp on the high beam. And when you're running both of them, you wind up with probably about... 1.85 amps.
So
if you're running it on 30 milliamps and getting the same result, then you have an efficient lighting system.
Well, that's basically where I was getting at. So these Beckett oil burner igniters are not cheap. They're about $60, I think.
Oh, but wait a minute. Yeah, you got a lot of voltage there.
Yeah. It's 20.
How high does that Beckett oil burner get to?
Huh? What'd you
say? How many volts is the output of the Beckett oil burner?
20,000 volts.
Oh, well, let me do some more math.
At 30 milliamps. So initially, to run this Beckett oil burner igniter, it's going to take you 12 volts at 4.8 amps. All right, so, you know, that's... And I'm not saying you're going to be getting over Unity, but what I'm trying to say here is that if you can generate the equivalence of what this thing does without having to use the amperage that this thing takes to run, such as with the Van de Graaff generator and the Wimshurst style and all the different Lord Kelvin generators, the static energy, if you can get the voltage up high enough to produce at least 20 kilovolts at 30 milliamps, you could run that doggone light bulb, man, straight off of high voltage alone. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I've been trying to say. And so with my technology that I've been researching about the plasma energy, it's not like the Keshi hoodoo voodoo where you gotta love your reactor and if you're a jerk you don't get free electricity. That's not the kind of plasma I'm talking about.
Look, I made a mistake. That's not 1 amp, I'm sorry. That's about 1 ohm. So there was my problem there.
So is it more or less than what I'm getting now?
Hang on.
Anyway, while he's doing the math, back to my plasma, is that if you energize any of the noble gases into the plasma state, essentially all you're doing, you're sending a high frequency wave through this gas that's trapped inside of a vacuum, and you're causing these gas molecules to bounce off of each other so rapidly that they in turn produce friction, which in turn produce heat, and depending on which gas you got will determine on what color the light is coming off of that. But the key about it is, Light is heat, heat is light. So inside that doggone plasma chamber, there is heat inside there. Right? And if you can energize it into the plasma state, you know you got heat. You can take that energy back off of that reactor via a transfer of heat into like a tubing with water or any liquid circulating through there. The actual tubing itself could be the anodes and the cathodes, where you can actually pull off DC voltage off of each leg of that deal right there. And so you're basically taking old mercury arc rectifier style technology and turning it into a little safer version of a plasma reactor, where you have now a high voltage AC to DC rectifier, which produces light, produces heat, and, you know, voltage out the other end. You see what I mean?
Yep.
And the whole key about it is, and I've done this so many times, is that the radiant energy that's coming off of the top of a Tesla coil, the static electricity that's coming off of a Van de Graaff generator, or any static generator, even a negative ion generator, that energy can wirelessly turn on fluorescent lighting. It can wirelessly turn on LED lighting. There's so many different, it can energize our argon into the plasma state itself. So you're sitting there taking energy out of the air, changing the frequency, energizing the gas back into a totally different frequency. All you're doing is manipulating the energy that's already there. Does anybody not understand what I'm trying to explain here? Anybody? Nobody?
What's your negative?
Right. So basically, it's not how we're using the, it is how we're using the energy, because we're using it inefficiently. We use a brute force magnetic field to send a line of flux through some copper wire to shake loose the loosely connected electron to cause the current flow of electricity that we call electricity. But nonetheless, it's all in the magnetic realm. The magnetic pulses that are going back across there. You can do the same thing with a transistor. You can do the same thing with a direct connection to tap it on and off the battery and get that pulse of energy, because energy travels in waves. And so, you know, Justin, you understand a lot of stuff about, you know, water and magnetic fields, and I know that your terminology kind of butts heads with what I'm saying, but even you can understand water itself is one of the, if not the most powerful sources of energy out there in this world. Am I wrong? Justin, you still there?
Yep.
I think we lost Justin.
No.
Oh, well, we'll talk to him later about it. But either way, you know, you separate the water, the hydrogen and oxygen from each other. You got two gases, one explosive, one implosive. When the two recombine, they actually release an electrical charge. So they got hydrogen cells out there that separate the hydrogen and oxygen, and in the cell portion of it, when the hydrogen and oxygen recombining, it's actually producing electric charge that in turn charges up the battery bank. I say that's pretty amazing technology. What do you guys think? Nobody?
I think my calculator's on the fritz. I'm using the one on the computer now.
Man, y'all killing me. So you got any ideas there, Jermaine?
No, just, okay. Can you explain to me what a negative ion generator is? Because I never was.
Well, it basically builds up a static charge. You know, electrons shift places. Like when you're rubbing your feet on the carpet, you're picking up extra stray electrons. All right, and that static charge, yes, will carry over, you know, through, it goes through your rubber shoes, through your body, charges your body up extra, and then you go over and you touch somebody like your brother on the ear or something like that, and you get that little lightning bolt that goes across there. That's essentially what a negative ion generator does. It produces a static charge. And so they use negative ion generators to negatively charge the plates so that all the other, like the dust molecules in your house, they're trying to steal charge from it, right? It'll attract that dust to these plates, and then all you got to do is wash these plates off, and you can reuse the same filter over and over again.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive stuff, man.
Yeah.
As far as the actual terminology to explain it in graphic detail, I'm not really positive of how to actually explain it, but that's the simple of it. Basically, you're building up a static charge, and if you notice, like things like styrofoam. Have you ever tried to get styrofoam off of you whenever you, like, if you take a piece of styrofoam and break it up? You know, little beads, and they just, like, cling to you?
Oh, they're the worst, huh?
Oh, yeah, they're a nightmare, man. And try to sweep them up, and it is an art, a true art, to try to clean up styrofoam beads if you ever get a spill of those.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to change, they're trying to steal electrons, vice versa, you know. And so, with that said, all of it's still energy. Everything.
I got your results.
All right.
With the 13.8 volt, you should have 3.99 amps, almost 4 amps, okay, in order to make that go to 55 watts. And to go from 55 watts with the 20,000 volts, it should only take you 0.00275 amps. So you're basically right close to about 10% efficiency compared to the 12-volt system.
10% for the better or worse?
Worse.
Well,
it said 30 milliamps. This is looking real close to 3 milliamps by math.
All I know is that normally it takes me 12 volts, a 12-volt car battery to light up one of those bulbs. Now, keep in mind, I'm using a 12-volt car battery to do this.
Now, if you were at 2,000 volts and it did the same thing with 30 milliamps, then you'd be about even efficiency.
I haven't tried it at 2,000 volts.
Oh.
But the thing is, I'm just saying, and here's another thing I'm not positive on, is that these Beckett oil burner igniters, somebody told me it's 10,000 per leg. And I was only running this off of one leg.
Oh, okay.
So, I don't know. All I can say, if somebody really cares about it enough, they can do the math on there, but I do know that you can light up a high voltage, you can light up a burnout tungsten element incandescent light bulb with a Beckett oil burner igniter. That the output is 20 kV, peak at 30 milliamps.
Yeah, I bet that's only on peak, so you're probably not running up on peaks. So you're probably doing comparable efficiency. And if you're only using the leg at 10,000, that would mean you got like 5.9 or so milliamps.
So, the next question would be
here's the thing. I don't think you're running 20,000 volts because that little minute break in the wire, it only has a small gap, so I don't think the voltage is getting up that high.
So then that means it's running off of less.
Yeah, you measure the distance for your spark gap to find out how many volts you're actually using.
So the next question would be, could you build a windmill that had the equivalence of like a Wimshurst style, or even a Van de Graaff for that matter, a windmill that would produce enough static charge to literally light up a tungsten element light bulb that was burnt out?
Well, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I was thinking about making a Wimshurst windmill.
Well, that's another reason why that version of the doggone ceiling fan generator that I was talking, that I sent over for you to check out, was I wanted to see how high the voltage would actually get on that. I don't care about the wattage or the amperage, because the research that I'm doing, I'm not worried about the wattage or the amperage. What I want is the highest voltage, highest frequency that I can get. Do you see what I'm saying? Because what I'm talking about doing is not running an electricity in the same sense that everyone else is thinking of how we use electricity these days. Okay, now the math that you're using right there and the math that all the electricians and everybody out there and the physicists and all them they're using, it doesn't apply to what it is that I'm talking about. Not at this stage in the game.
Well, let me add this. If thinking about how small that gap is, it probably isn't getting up very high, much less than 2,000. If you're running 30 milliamp, I'm pretty sure that you've got more efficiency than you would off the 13.8. But we'll go there. That's my bet, because I know that small gap is not going to allow the voltage to get high before it bleeds and drops it across.
Well, I'm positive that this is a more efficient way to run a light bulb.
I bet it is. I bet you can light any light bulb.
Yeah.
Everybody send your bad light bulbs to Shaziz.
Yeah, I'd take them. And the whole thing is that...
we'll see how many of them you can light up.
The whole thing is that when that light bulb will not light in the standard outlet because it's got a break in the circuit, it will light with that spark used as a spark gap. And so you can take high voltage, just like the doggone fluorescent bulbs that won't work when in the standard outlet, you can still light them up with high frequency. So you're not only able to light up a tungsten element or a fluorescent bulb, but you're also able to light up a tungsten element bulb with the right frequency range. Because the only thing that tungsten cares about is when that frequency is going through there, it's vibrating so rapidly, that energy can't get off of that tungsten fast enough, so it creates friction, which in turn creates heat, which in turn creates the light that you see off your light bulb.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, for all the people out there that are, you know, skeptical or give me a rash all the time and call me everything under the sun, how stupid I am, I ain't trying to use the electricity the way that you're trying to portray it with your math and physics and all this other crazy stuff that you learned in school. That's fine. It works for the inefficient system. All right? Your math fits that book really good. Okay? Because that's the best explanation for how electricity functions and how many watts and amperage and all this kind of stuff there. But for what I am trying to show and what I'm trying to do with my research, current watts and amps, they don't matter to me. Not at this stage in the game. When it gets over to the point where I'm actually going to take that energy off of what I've just generated and then start running the old efficient appliances and stuff like that, then your math will kick back in. But for this portion of the classroom setting, so to speak, it doesn't apply. You see what I mean?
Yep.
There's where the difference is.
Well, they got a feller out there, you figured he would disprove that the T-static actually even works, and he done it with his math. I'm sure he's a pretty friendly fella, and probably nice enough, but the fact is that the T-static does run itself. And the fact that he doesn't, you know, nobody outside the people in that small, community know how it works, and some of them don't know how it works. Very few people. If you don't know how it works, how can you prove it with math anyway? I tell you what, you can disprove all you want with math, but if something's running itself and you got over unity or you've got extreme efficiency and you're watching it and it's working, then I'd say the math is wrong. In designing a wind turbine, I sit there and I do some math and I do all this stuff, and you've seen my little computer programs that I wrote that do some of the math for me and stuff, and you see me adjust values and stuff, and I come across it, and I'm not using the real fancy formulas, but you know what? No matter how much numbers you put in here, and you can get this off of any engineer that deals with magnetics and electricity, they'll tell you it only gets you in the ballpark. It doesn't tell you what you're going to get. There are too many other variables out there. You just have to, when you finally get it done, you figure out how many windings you're supposed to have, and you know how many amps that wire is going to take with the temperature, and the voltage. Then you go to the RPMs that you figure are going to be your startup voltage. And you go to that, and you wind a test coil. Then you do some more math to find out if the rest of the math was right. Now that you're done with that, you're going to have to adjust how many windings you have on there to get everything in the ballpark again. And then when you put the prop up there and you figure the prop is exactly 4.5 tip speed ratio and you find out you did a better job and you got a 5.0 tip speed ratio, whoops, I guess we're going to have to go back here and the next one we're going to have to adjust the windings and take a few more off.
Well,
so it's the math is never, when it comes to magnetics and electricity, the math is never an exact science.
Here's proof of what you just said. The old style generators and the new style generators, both of them. There is a book out there called Secrets of the Alternator that talks about taking the diodes out of an AC Delco alternator. If you take the diodes out of an AC Delco alternator, that which are the regulators that regulate the voltage, you can get 120 volts AC out of a doggone AC Delco alternator. Now, if you raise the RPMs up on that same alternator, you'll get way, way, way over 120 volts AC.
Yeah, finer windings.
Yeah.
And putting the RPMs up, yeah, you get 20,000 watts out of a doggone 95-watt alternator.
And that...
just by changing the windings.
And the reason why they put a voltage regulator on your vehicle is because that doggone generator and the alternator, whichever one you use, has the capability of putting too much energy into your car and literally starting a wire fire.
Yep.
So you got access to a whole lot of power in a device that has to be intentionally regulated in order to keep it down to a range to where it's not burning out all the coils on your car or whatever.
And for some reason, they give you a 6-horsepower engine to sit there and run a 3,500-watt generator. And the thing is big and bulky. It takes two people to carry it, and that's why they put wheels on it so you can drag it around, but you can get it all and just put it in that little small alternator.
Yep. So there you go, man.
Which is only 5% efficient anyway. Yeah, let's just put a bigger motor on it. It will sell it to them.
The thing is, if we actually took the knowledge that we've got at our fingertips and we got together and we engineered properly with everything that we know, there is no reason why we can't design something, you know, so much more efficient. Maybe it's not going to be over unity. I still believe that over unity is possible. I know that free energy is possible because I see examples of it in nature all the time. Try to tell a 300 mile an hour wind not to blow your house over. All right, that's a tornado. If you live in Tornado Alley, you know, you get 300 mile an hour winds that takes your house up off the foundation and throws your car up into the tree, and you, if you're standing around it, that's power.
Yeah, make sure you open the door and all the windows. Your door might fly off, but you know the door's a nice alternative as to replacing the whole house.
Yeah.
If it's allowed to lose the vacuum, it's probably not going to explode and blow away.
Well, and if
you're best flying debris, you know, kind of like a piece of straw going through a telephone pole or getting stuck in somebody's windshield and doing a complete seal. It's the speed and momentum of what is there and the direction of the fibers and stuff that does all the damage.
Well, there's a story that has a really good moral to it. It's called The Three Little Pigs.
Now, if a car comes in and hits the house because it's blind, that's a different story.
The Three Little Pigs, one of them built his house out of sticks, one of them built his house out of straw, and one of them built his house out of bricks. Which one you think held up to the big bad wolf? So the third one, smart enough to build his out of bricks, the big bad wolf puffed and puffed and puffed and huffed and all that kind of jazz in the story and couldn't blow the house down. Well, if you know about aerodynamics and you know about strength of materials and geometrical shapes, then you could build you a house that would withstand a tornado being right on top of it. It just circle around. You wouldn't even get your hair mussed up, man.
I'd build my house out of rubber.
So they'd bounce?
Oh yeah, and it'd bend, just you know, just like the old Chinese proverb. It's better to bend than to break. So yeah, you just go ahead. Oh cool. You know. Just start doing your Hawaiian dance while he's blowing on it and watch him turn blue in the face.
Well, there you go, man. Look.
Guess nobody ever thought of building their house out of rubber.
Well, make your house out of a big rubber floating ball so that if you're in a flood zone, then you just float away, you know, and if it crams into something, it just bounces off.
Now, if you build your house out of tires and dirt and make an earth ship, ain't nothing going to blow it away.
No, unless you get a flood.
Yeah, let's get you a high-power pump.
There you go. But like I said, even you heard it right there. Even me throwing in some negative possibilities. Unless we get a flood, and he already had an answer for, well, get a higher power pump. That's the whole deal, man.
Yeah, man, we'd just go ahead and put a snorkel up there and pump the air down, which would push the water out.
Yeah.
We'd just be blowing bubbles.
So where there's a will, there's a way. There's solutions out there. That's the whole point of this doggone mad science show, to show you, look, man, if you want to pay the man for your electric bill, more power to you, or less, depending on whether or not they're conserving. But the key is, you choose to pay the electric bill because you're either stuck in a position where it's easier, or you just don't want to take the time to research it and actually do it. You know, even if you put a solar panel up and run a light in your room on a solar panel instead of, you know, during the daytime running lights to light up your house off the power grid, use a solar panel to do it. Use a solar panel for your fan. You know, it gets cooler at night anyway, so you won't need the fan at night. You see what I mean?
Hey, you know what the funny thing is? After you built your Earthship, and you go this, and you've defeated everybody else's strength and technology with nothing but trash.
Yeah. Talk about want to clean up the planet. Look how many car tires. I've seen a massive, and I mean a massive, field of car tires.
And you know it's made up mostly of cobalt. You know what cobalt does? It absorbs radiation. Wow, what a storm shelter.
Hey, and you want to talk about a Faraday cage? The doggone belts inside of a tire? What are they, man?
It's steel belt, man.
Yeah, so you got steel belted tires that are your wall of your house that is covered with dirt, and so if there's an electromagnetic pulse over top of your earth house, which you could cover the roof with galvanized if you didn't want to have tires for the ceiling, but in reality, if you wanted to, take the time, you could actually build a dome out of tires.
Yep.
Which is how I might just do my dome. I might just go out there and tell everybody and his brother, if you got old tires you're trying to get rid of them, bring them over to me.
Yeah, you get these steel belted radials, you know, and the tire all rots off at the side, but you know what? That tread is usually intact because of the steel belt, unless the tread comes off and you're looking at nothing but the steel belt. But what a fan belt, man. That thing would take forever to wear out.
What if I built a doggone big giant dome out of tires?
Yeah.
Could you imagine the insulation factor of that? Could you imagine the sun beating down on them tires in the summertime, how warm it'd be inside that thing?
Oh, yeah. Grow grass on the roof. Just mow your roof.
Yeah.
Build it on a hill. It won't collect water.
So there's all kinds of possibilities.
Oh, you know what, man? I've been picking on Jermaine all week, man. He's talking about his design and stuff, and he actually corrected me once. I thought his solenoid motor was actually, I thought that it rotated, but no, it's the magnet going back and forth like a piston. And I also got another idea to throw at him: wind the coil on the whole loop there, and just run the piston inside there off one shaft in the middle. But you know. I'm sure he's already done that. But
okay, let me pause you for a second. One of two things could happen. Either you can take over the show and I can go visit nature, or we can go on a radio show and you can hold that thought for when we get back for a radio music break.
Anybody else need a nature break?
They all disappeared.
Jermaine disappeared. Oh my goodness. You need an 8-year-old. Why don't you just play a tune, and then I'm sure we'll get everybody back by then.
All right, folks, you're listening to Mad Science. We're going to go visit nature and get some coffee and come back and polish off the last hour of this show. So stay tuned. Peace and love, everybody.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Love account. I would... Oh, God, yes. Oh, that is gorgeous. Yeah. I need a cup of the brown stuff, the shade of an acorn made warm by the same source that I take my cakes from. Using a teapot, a mug, or fine china, been hooked up to IV, need constant supplies. And the truth for my urges might verge on perverted, perverted brown tea. I'm certain it's worth it. We Sherpas who work hers and use a fresh fountain. I've discerned brews from Peruvian mountains. I've slurped up a cup from an elephant's trunk with a couple of monks who utterly stunk. I've had bourbons with sultans and creams with queens, and I've bathed in Earl Grey. I'm really that keen, and missionaries dismiss me for my single epiphany. The difference between him and me is a simple sip of British tea. So when times are hard and life is rough, you can stick the kettle on and find me a cup. Now when I say Earl Grey, you say yes please. Earl Grey,
yes please.
Earl Grey,
yes please.
When I say Assam, you say lovely. Assam,
lovely.
Assam,
lovely.
When I say ooh, you say ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh. Oh, we're gone
on for all.
Yeah. I've been around the world in 80 brews to see the place it takes me to make a brew that tastes like the cream cakes made by angels do. I'm not the same as you, get shaky but aim to swig amazing fluids but don't make it the same. Now using fine leaves picked by pretty maidens in a bag knitted by a seamstress who lives in Copenhagen, brewed up in a pot made of semi-precious metal. Let the blessed content settle in my very special kettle. Now when I say ooh, you say long. Ooh,
long.
Ooh,
long.
When I say herbal, you say no thanks. Herbal.
No thanks.
Herbal.
No thanks.
No. No, I want milk in it. Strong though. I want to see that spoon stand up.
If you're tired of tea, then you're tired of life.
I'm madder than a hatter, it fires my mic. Liken me to Earl Grey, a Sam, or Ginger, Lapsang, Souchon, raise my pinky finger. Keep your sodding coffee in a proper copper coffee bottom, spot me loving teapot to your Ponzi rotten coffee shop. Coffee clocks nodding off, lost the plot, sodding off. Need some caffeine tannin and a Battenberg to top it off. Cut them off a different cloth, a different lot can take their beer on 80 cups a day. I haven't slept for 80 years. You could say I'm mad with tea, or just say I'm mad. Oh, you can't stay any longer. Oh, actually, I'm quite glad. All the more Battenberg for me. I can barely pour, my hands have got a bit shaky from caffeine. Oh, I love it though. I'd sell my own grandma for a cup. Well, I'd sell your grandma.
Can you remember
voyagers of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Yeah, give me the number for 911. I was just telling Muddy that that's what it sounds like in my mad science laboratory. I was blowing stuff up, man, trying to figure out things. But anyway, where were we, Muddy? We had a conversation going on, but since Justin's got to leave, I had a question about, Justin used a different version of terminology than I do, so it doesn't always... Doesn't always jive with what I'm trying to say. And not to say that you're wrong about anything of what you're saying. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that our terminology just kind of butt heads once in a while. But either way, I had asked a question to you before you disappeared over there about water and energy. You know, I'm saying that water is probably one of the most perfect energies we got out there, because just separating its two And that, and the fact that if you separate the hydrogen and oxygen and then recombine them, they release a electrical charge. So I guess my question was, what your version of, the water, you know, being like the perfect fuel. You still there? Did we lose him again?
No. Water is essential to everything in the entire universe.
Well, there's so much to go on. See, water is a dipole molecule, so it has a positive and a negative field on there. And so you know that you can rock a water molecule just by simply sending a wave, a magnetic wave through there.
And right. So, like, when you say dipole, yes, it is dipole. When we stick a piece of Kleenex in a cup filled with water, we observe it as the Kleenex is absorbing it. But if we were to look at, like, the crystalline structure, the little squares, the angles that the Kleenex is made up of, how the porosity of it, right, how many holes it has in it, the water still is, it's cohesion, but it's adhesion. They're both things are taking effect at the same time. Like gravity, right? When you stick that piece of Kleenex in there, the cup is below the Kleenex and you're holding it, but yet the water travels up, defying what we would say gravity, right?
Well, mass also is does going that above. In trees too.
Capillary action. So you're basically right. Saying water is taking over the Kleenex instead of the Kleenex taking over the water.
Right. Right, if you were to put it in oil, it wouldn't actually go, it would take a longer time duration to fill those holes in the Kleenex.
You ever wondered how, have you ever seen the grapevines out there in the field, and how a grapevine actually gets water all the way up to, let's say, the top of a 30, 40 foot tree, to where that grapevine has grew up the top of that tree to those leaves? You ever wondered how that happens?
It would be the cellulose in the plant, the oils in the plant, the most important part of the plant, which we take and we make carbon fiber from.
Well,
same thing with our body, the hydrodynamics.
you got the Howard Libby redwood trees out there in California. Them things are over 300 foot tall in the water, makes it up to the top without a pump.
Yeah, that's the point I was trying to get to.
Right.
Nature has the capability of pumping water hundreds of feet up through these vines, and, you know, whether it's wicking effect or capillary action or whatever. If you needed to get water up there, if you wasn't in a hurry, you could let the grapevine do it. See what I mean?
Right. It's all a time domain, and water's It's a tricky subject. I write about it a lot. There's many ways, many holes you can go down with water.
Well, one time I was out trying to, you know, when your neighborhood or when your wooded area around your house gets overgrown, like some of these trees, grapevines will get the size of a tree trunk, man. And these grapevines will spread out, and they'll climb up trees, and they'll actually choke out a tree because it's like wrapped up around the tree and got leaves blocking out the sunlight of the tree that needs the leaves, the sunlight too. And so one time I went and cut one of those vines dangling down from that tree to kill off the top of that doggone grapevine to save that tree. And you wouldn't believe how much water come running out of that thing. It's pretty amazing. So I wonder, like,
it came out like a faucet.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's pretty impressive.
Right. Like, if you look at the energy and how much mass is above you in a tree, or even in the rain, or even when the sandstorm happens, the same thing's happening inside of our body, the hydrodynamics, right? What is the amount of milliamps from your body to move your arm when you have that thought, that impulse? That's mass and volume. It's water, right? When we look at amps, we say we need a lot of amps. We don't, because water can't be compressed per se.
Well, you know that too much amperage will kill the human body. Alright, so it's pretty amazing that muscles, you know, you send an electrical signal from your brain, tells your muscles when to expand and contract. It's pretty doggone amazing, you know, how much weight that a person can lift with, or even a 95-pound weakling, you know, how much they can lift with their doggone arm or legs and stuff, you know. That takes a lot of energy, man.
Right, it's the cellulose and the water, the two differences in potentials, right, because you can't mix water and oil together. That's what cellulose is. It's a fatty substance.
So, do you understand how that plant is actually taking that water from under the ground all the way up to the tip top of that tree?
Yeah, it's the same thing as our body. Like, we would say that the brain, the thought, sends the electrical charge, but if you were to break that up in the bigger wave, the brain is pumped by the heart, and the lungs pump the heart. It's the same thing as the earth. The earth is pumping the leaves, and then the ground is pumping the roots. It's a wave. Everything's a wave.
Well,
we ride on bigger constants, is a better way of putting it.
I would have to say that because your body is like three quarters water, then there's something to be said about the power available in water, the energy, the calories that you burn or whatever, you know. It's your body puts off heat. It has torque, power, pressure, you know, hydraulics and everything going on inside your body. Your body is probably the perfect machine. I mean, it can be destroyed if you overpower it or abuse it or whatever. But nonetheless, if you actually look at the physical makeup of the human body, and then you can still sit around and tell me there ain't no such thing as free energy, I'm saying somebody ain't paying attention to what's going on in nature. Period.
Right. If you look at the body, the potential difference, the body has a vacuum in the lungs. If you were to take a knife or something and poke the chest, it would deflate the lungs. That spring tension on the air is the beginning of it.
Well, there's a lot of physics going on in the human body that I think that you could take that knowledge, replicate it, and build perfect machinery. I'm serious. Just what you see with what nature does. You talk about pumping water. It takes a lot of pressure to pump water up many feet up into the air, yet without no electricity whatsoever. Well, I can't say no electricity because we know that the plants, you know, pretty much have electric deal going on with them as well. But I'm saying that a plant able to pump, a tree able to pump water 30, 40 feet in the air with very minimum. You don't got like 220 volts pumped to the doggone tree to get it to pump the water up to the leaves at the top. You see what I'm saying?
I think
they're guided.
Yeah.
Turbo pressure of the individual cells itself hold the water, and then the capillary action takes over for a few more feet and keeps on going up, and it does it in stages. That's the best I can figure.
So.
The plant does next to nothing for work. It's like if you have something that's hot above a bottle of water, it's going to draw the water out of it. Like if it's wintertime and your house is really dry, you can take a pot of water and put it on the stove and it'll be gone in overnight. Right? So the same thing with the plant. You got the nice cool roots down in the ground. You got the leaves. And they're absorbing. That's all the surface area. And we get into many deep things, but that heat is drawing up the water.
My next question to you, Justin, is this.
Please.
Do you think that it would be possible to physically mimic how a tree pumps water? To build like a fibrous or whatever type of hose that you could like stick down in a well and it would literally replicate what the tree's doing in order to take that water up over top of a hill?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like modern mad science, but what if it was possible to literally build, you know, we look at fiber optics. Fiber optic cables are up underneath the ground. They send light down the hill, up the hill, around the corner, around
right.
the curves.
That's a perfect example because you say light, but yet fiber optics is another form of quote-unquote electricity.
Yeah.
Right? When do we define these different effects, different states, different decimal values? How do we define them? How do we correlate them between each other? Like you said, we butt heads in terminology, right? Correlation. How do we communicate in a more, would we say, advanced way of these effects?
Well, I'd say by far, today had to be the best conversation you and I have ever had.
We've had many conversations.
Yeah, we have, but I'm saying, as far as we know, we got this terminology gap where I kind of use like redneck science terms when I'm trying to say stuff because I'm trying to talk to people that, you know, are not really well versed in different terminology as far as electricity goes or whatever. I'm trying to make it as simple as possible. But I'm also trying to draw in the knowledge that you've acquired through your research so that I can figure out a way that I can put it in terminology that they can understand exactly what you're saying. And we just took two different examples, the way the tree puts water up there and fiber optics, and they blended in together. Both of them are energy traveling in waves. Both of them are doing work. You see what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, go ahead.
If there's a way to replicate what a tree does, you literally have a pump that, you know, even if it was only a trickle coming out the top, it's still moving that water uphill using something that nature already showed you how to do. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Would it be possible to cut a tree limb and have the tree limb dripping over the side? You know, I don't know, would that hurt the tree?
Well, it would do the exact same thing we would do. We would coagulate, right?
Build a band-aid.
When you cut the tree, it would bleed and it would, try to heal itself. We're much like trees. We don't, you know.
So what we need to figure out is how the actual tree actually brings the water up that high, how it physically does it, and then try to replicate that synthetically using whatever materials. Like, when I saw the video where they took the paper towel, like you had mentioned earlier, and they were wicking it over, basically siphoning it from one container to the next until that water found its level. It kept on wicking, but the key was it went up above its water level until it could find another place to drop it back down on the other side. You see what I mean?
Right, it's all about heating and cooling with water, right? Because we can't compress it, like, right? So we get extracted and contracted, right? Which is a result of potential difference, hot and cold, right? Same thing with the pod boats and all the other stuff. Even electricity itself is the potential differences of the vibration, right? You could take a piece of plastic and vibrate it really fast and touch both ends, and because you're touching both ends that are from the center, you're getting two different potentials of a wavelength, and you'll actually read it on your voltmeter.
Yeah, my plasma reactor, what I've been saying forever and a day, isn't what everybody thinks it is. Essentially, it's a tuner. You speed up and slow down the electrons to get out the frequency range that you want out the other side. You see what I mean?
Right.
And so, I'm not doing anything fancy. All I'm doing is using the physics of how this actually generates plasma to speed it up and slow it down. You know, if you got like a microwave oven sending microwaves into a water molecule, it's going to rock that water molecule so rapidly, but it does it at a constant rate, and what rocks it back and forth. But what if you could actually take that doggone microwave and speed it up and slow it down to where you want it? You see what I mean? Like most microwaves, like Muddy was saying, could destroy the nutrients in the food, but what if you were able to adjust that thing, like the magnetron itself, to change the frequency just enough to still rock the water molecules, but do it at a slower rate to where it doesn't damage the food? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I completely acknowledge what you're saying, but
to a better frequency that actually has the structure that the water is meant to be at.
Yeah.
Right. What's the minute? Like, right? Like, what's the? I guess the best question to ask for that would be, what's the minimum vibration it takes to excite water?
Well, that's the whole key of my plasma reactor, is to be able to experiment by being able to change frequencies on the output side of it. You can change it on the input by speeding it up, slowing it down, but you can also change it on the output by the length of the spark gap on the other side. You can actually change the frequency there. So there's a wide range of tuning available inside there. One of the things that I found out with messing around with Tesla coils about changing the frequencies on there was I was hitting all kinds of frequencies. I hit one that literally caused my computer to start popping windows up randomly. It just started opening programs on my computer. And the other one had a frequency range that matched the remote control for my doggone six-disc CD changer. The door kept flying in and out real fast until finally the gear failed in there and it jammed and stuck out to this very day.
Right, and why is all of this happening? It's actually very simple. Every one of these things has, besides the windows, has an LC circuit in it, right? So when you hit that certain frequency, you vibrate it. Its power is not coming from your transmitter, its power is coming from its DC source, which it already normally has. You're just exciting it. Like your Walkman. Remember when you had your tone generator hooked to your Tesla coil, and you took your Walkman and you threw it across the floor, and it still kept going because sound can travel with literally no losses. It's not giving an energy source. What it's doing is it's exciting the LC circuit inside the.
Well, what was impressive about what I showed there was the distance of wireless energy transfer that you was getting out of the deal.
Right, yeah. Because of the long length and the amount of energy that's there, it's not picking it up from the Tesla coil. It's the battery itself is what's powering that Walkman. You're just exciting. You're basically like a speaker. That LC circuit in that Walkman, you're sending out a sound from that coil, and it's bouncing on it.
Frequency.
Yeah. Right.
Cool. Stephen Gibbons posted a link in there from greenbeltconsulting.com. It says hydraulic redistribution of tree roots. You have to go over there and read it, but basically I think he's found a way that the tree is actually able to pump water up the hill there.
So, cool.
So, you know...
300 feet.
Huh?
300 feet, too, for redwood. Wow. That's a lot of height. That's... if you measured the pressure from that, that'd be many bar. Many, many bar. Raymond would tell you right off the top of his head. You bet he ain't here.
Silence.
That's Jermaine.
Oh.
Yeah, making all that silent racket.
Is he back?
He's been working hard all week, man. He's made some accomplishments. Hey, Jermaine.
Yeah.
Fill us in on your week, man. Fill us in on your doggone solenoid engine. Your new design. Fill us in on your progress.
I'm now busy making the crankshaft. I'm now in the shed, so that's why I was mute. That's why I muted myself.
So, you got a moment to talk? We're live on air.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go over the whole thing you got in progress so far.
Oh, I got a PVC tube, and it has an iron holder with two pins that stick out two slits I cut in the PVC pipe. On the two ends of that metal thing, I put two magnets. On the ends of the, at the end of the pipe, I put a electromagnet on one side and on the other side, and I made a commutator that switches polarity, so the electromagnets attract the magnets and they push away the magnets, so one end pushes and the other one attracts, and half a cycle it switches polarity, so it pushes and attracts.
That's a complex compound commutator you built there as well.
I don't know what you just said, but it sounded cool.
Oh, it's neat. It's got he's using three tracks, and only the middle one changes, and the outer two ones. Well, yeah, they all three change. He's got two wires coming from the power source, and then two other connections coming to, for the coils. And basically, they're all, if he didn't do it this way, he'd wind up with a big old wrapping of wire around the commutator as it turned. But, his piston that's running up and down, the magnetic piston, he's got two magnets at either end and a piece of pipe in the middle with two ears welded on there, and that actually operates the piston rods, one on each side, that go down the slots of the PVC and turn the crank. It's a total different design. He had me stumped there for a bit, and I said, oh no, you don't need that commutator like that, you need a simple one. Till I got educated by him, and he actually set me straight. So he's definitely on the ball, man. And he's got it going. He's working real hard.
I know what I'm doing.
Oh, yes you do. Yes you do. Sorry I got it. My mistake. It's going to be pretty. I'm sure when he gets up here, Boomer's going to have him build a big one.
Oh, yeah.
Boomer don't do nothing small.
Well, I'm sitting here looking at this, still looking at this article that Stephen Gibbons posted, and there's a little diagram on there. How many feet is 8 meters?
Ask Justin, he knows.
Justin?
Meter is like 40 inches, isn't it?
So 8 meters, how many feet?
I don't know
that?
Anything. I refuse to know.
I'm all masked out.
Come on, guys! I called you super geniuses at the beginning of the show.
I'm going to buy you a calculator. Ah, here we go.
How much is 1 meter? How many feet is 1 meter?
40 inches. That's a little over, that's like 3 inches
below 4 feet.
Yeah, 3'4".
So 8 meters would be what, like 24 and above?
A meter's 3'3", per se. No math. No, today's Saturday, no school. I'm going to do no math.
Math.
Divided by 12. Equal 26.6 feet.
Alright, so this tree is able to bring water from 26 feet below the dirt all the way to 40 feet above the dirt. That's pretty doggone impressive, man. Hydraulic pressure going all the way up to 40 feet in the air above 20 some odd feet below. That's give or take because, it depends on the tree, the size, and all the different deal, but regardless, all the trees out there are taking water out from underneath the ground and pumping it all the way up to the leaves at the top.
Yeah.
And they say there ain't no such thing as free energy. Yeah, right.
There's a lot of mysterious things about trees. You notice that the trees may vary from around the world, but they all have the same V-shaped pattern.
You mean the way the forks and branches and all that?
Yep.
Yeah, they all have their life energy vibration, their own frequency that they vibrate at.
Well, right. I guess the key difference right here is frequency.
The electrons leaving the earth, going through the trunk, and heading up. Unlike charges attract, like charges repel. So the unlike charge of the negative ground going to the positive sky tell it which direction to grow. But as it grows and branches out due to the frequency and having its own internodial lengths, it branches out. And as it branches out, the like charges of each of these branches are basically spreading themselves out, so that they go out evenly. And they kind of look like a static buzz ball.
So the plant is sitting there sucking water up out of the doggone ground, keeps itself hydrated, and brings the water up there. And through a process called photosynthesis, the Muhammad's trying to get in here. through the doggone process of photosynthesis, carbon is scrubbed out of the air, releases fresh oxygen. The carbon is then turned into plant food, essentially, sugar. So, when you burn sugar, what do you get?
Carbon. Yeah, carbon.
Alright, so I need to send it. You guys keep talking. I got to send Muhammad a message.
Put him in here.
All right, let me see. Well, first I need to ask him if he wants to go live, so just hold on. Keep talking.
But she said it's like Russians.
Yes. Collector combs.
Yeah. What are you thinking about, you got electricity. It's generated by all the chemical processes going on. Plus, where you got electricity, you've got magnetics. And water's involved with both of them. I wonder how that might be part of the interaction that actually draws the water all the way up to the top of the vine or the top of the tree as well.
Like, if it is raining, water droplets fall down. They create a static charge. Is the static charge being collected by the tree branches and leaves?
Wait, is it a dipole?
Yeah, you know the farmer will tell you, man, he'd rather have one day of rain than to water his crops for 2 weeks, because you get the same amount of growth. When it rains, you get that static charge coming down that actually gives more life energy to the plants.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Well, see, there you go, man. There you go. Look.
It's like Lord Kelvin's generator, man. The electric charge comes down. And you know the water, when it comes down, it has the basic structure and encoding in it to actually add life. So it's decoding life itself. That's something else. That's something you cannot put into water, you know, by man-made means.
Well, I'll tell you what, that silence is a killer.
It's germane.
All right, so basically, you know, if you took and learned something from everything that nature has to offer, doggone it, man, people just like call me during the show. I ain't answering. Go away.
Yes.
Knock down. Yeah.
So, like, you thought about that the engine that squirt water
in
which pushes the piston down because it expands 60,000 times.
Yeah.
So, how do you want to get the engine warm? You could just use gasoline, but does HHO gas, does the ignition, the explosion, is that hotter?
Yes.
Well,
depending on the material too. Water burning from hydrogen burning reacts different to every different material that it comes in front of. Its burning point, its igniting point is 700 degrees. But after that, when you put it in front of another material, it like, goes hotter.
Yeah, if you put the HHO flame over to titanium, it actually goes automatically to 4,000 degrees.
Right, it matches the impedance.
Yep, whatever material it touches, it goes to its melting point.
Well, it's
harmonic.
How I was considering doing it was basically using the same concept as an air compressor. You know, when you compress air, you generate heat. All right, so if you could spin that internal combustion engine up high enough to overcome the compression to keep on pressurizing that cylinder inside there, you can raise the temperature of that cylinder up and then inject your water in a fine mist and get the expansion that you get 1600 times its mass for whatever water you put in there. And so at a certain point, when the temperature gets high enough in there, I believe that it will literally create the separation between the hydrogen and oxygen, and that you could then start igniting that fuel on demand using the standard, coil system.
Yeah.
The ignition system. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
but the exhaust gases, it's just water, so you can run it through a condenser, which goes back to your water tank.
Yeah, reuse your fuel.
So nothing has been lost.
Yeah, that's right. That's what, you know, and build the condenser, because you want to be able to have some exhaust to atmosphere. So you could build a muffler that was kind of like, it had a filter on the other side, on the back end of it. But it would still allow air pressure to be sucked in, so when that hydrogen and oxygen hit that cold spot there, which would now be your muffler, it's ironic that now your muffler would be cold as opposed to hot. But when the hydrogen and oxygen came out and hit the cooler spot, it would recombine, and then that water, instead of being ejected out of the back of the exhaust, would actually drain down, and that water draining down would create a vacuum, sucking in more fuel from out in the air.
Probably absorb the electrical charge over the water and recombine.
Yeah. You could actually put a fuel cell inside there that would basically grab that doggone charge as it was recombining.
Right.
So, with the right engineering, if you could get the right people, that's why I keep talking about the dream team. If you could get the right people in the lab to take the school books, shove them off to the side to the extent that you're not going to go directly out of these school books. You're going to use some some different science and some engineering from the basic laws of physics that you know, and basic science in itself, how things act, and we could literally build an internal combustion engine that would be self-contained. Wouldn't have no wasted heat, because everything from this engine itself would literally be reused. You see what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So, Muhammad, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, we're live on air. How's it going? Oh, well, hold on. Now I got Aunt Thomas in there. So, anyway, basically what I'm trying to say is that if we get the right people together and got them in the right lab, we could take every bit of everything that we know right now. We have every bit of technology to literally build the perfect generator. And it ain't going to be defying any of the known laws of physics. It's just going to simply use the laws of physics to our advantage and do the work that we want done. It's as simple as that. What do you think about that there, Muhammad?
I think it's cool. I think there is a known generator. Yeah, do you heard of thermoelectric?
Yeah.
Thermoelectric generator. I think that's the new one, but it's still in progress. They didn't make it yet, so it's still in progress. They haven't figured out to make it big for use it in home and something like this. So.
Well, you've heard of the Peltier elements, right?
What?
The Peltier elements.
No,
they use them in igloo coolers. If you put electricity to them, one side will get hot and the other side will get cold.
Yes, exactly. This is the concept of thermoelectric generator.
Yeah. Well, you can take these same Peltier elements and you can heat one side and cool the other side and get it to produce electricity just like a regular thermocouple.
Exactly, yes.
And so, if that was done properly, engineered properly, like Raymond was talking about using the exhaust of an internal combustion engine to actually generate the heat, and the temperature difference of the air fins on the outside would cause it to produce electricity. So you could charge your battery with the waste heat off of your engine. What do you think?
That's cool. That's cool.
So, Thomas, you're live. You got here right at the end of the deal, man.
Yeah.
We were talking about you.
Uh-oh.
It was good, though. We was wanting you for the chemistry portion. There was something going on at the point in the show where I had a chemical question. I can't remember what it was. Anyway.
How to do with duckweed.
Yeah, okay, there you go. There's nitrogen in duckweed that you can actually take the duckweed out of your pond and you can put it on your garden and it'll actually help your garden out. Well, not only that, but duckweed can be used to feed ducks, birds, chickens, fish, and you can actually eat duckweed if you cook it. But you don't want to eat it raw because it'll make you ill. So, we took what would have normally been trash and turned it into treasure. And we actually started the show off with that link that you put in there about the solar motor, solar engine there. And I also put links in there about other ones that are actually using solar panels. And I was wondering, see, he did these out of trash bags. He made his solar strands out of trash bags. He basically took strips of trash bags and stretched them out a little bit and then put them on these plastic cups and built his rotor so that it actually, when the heat heats up the deal, it expands and contracts, and that's what helps, according to what he, way he's explained it, with it rotating like it does. But that's a rotor that's turning with absolutely no electricity. It's just using the expansion and contraction and the heat. It's pretty brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you need a material that expands and then contracts a lot?
Yeah, and I think that's probably why Stephen Gibbons posted in there about nitinol, because nitinol does that too, right? Expands and contracts to the heat, like the little element that's in the back of your doggone thermometer. Not the mercury type thermometers, but the ones that have a little needle on there. When it gets hot outside, this thing actually straightens out and it will move that needle depending on how hot this thing gets. I hooked it up to a cigarette lighter and it'll straighten completely out, and then whenever you take the heat off of it, it'll coil itself back up.
Yeah.
You want to be careful not to overheat it though.
Yeah, because if
you overheat it, it won't go back. Yeah, it won't go back again.
Yeah.
You could actually use it for tendons and muscles or something in robotics.
Well, I was just thinking all kinds of different processes you could use that for, man. You know, like I said, I know I get kicked in the booty all the time for talking about, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it, because we're surrounded in it. We talked about water today, we talked about solar power, we talked about thermoelectrics and all kinds of stuff, and then some. I think we even talked about duckweed. Now, what could you use duckweed for? I mean, you can dehydrate it and make flake fish food, but you could also use duckweed to burn as a fuel. And what would the chemistry be if you burn firewood and you get wood ash that you can make lye soap and different things out of? Then what could you use the chemistry if you burnt dehydrated duckweed for heat? That'd be a good test, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, it'd be something to check out. But I don't think you're going to get the nitrogen. I'm pretty sure if you burn it in open air, in order to burn it off to get heat out of it, you're going to get ammonia that comes off of it. And the ammonia is going to carry the nitrogen off. Ammonia is basically just a nitrogen instead of oxygen-based water molecule. It's two hydrogen atoms, but a nitrogen atom instead of oxygen, because nitrogen is another oxidizer.
Well, what sparked this little deal off here was that I had noticed my pond turning green. I had a couple of different ponds, not my new pond, but I had a couple of ponds and they're turning green with that duckweed, and it's what is normally obnoxious. So yesterday I started doing some research on how to get rid of duckweed. Well, there's all kinds of methods on how to skim the pond or actually use herbicides and stuff like that. But then as I got to looking into it, I found out that ducks and chickens eat this stuff. People harvest it and actually even sell it to other people who are using it for aquaponic systems. And it has other benefits, such as, see, the duckweed is damaging to the pond when it takes over the pond because it sucks all the nutrients out of the pond. But if it's maintained properly, the fish will eat it. And so I figured out, you know, there's a bird called a herring that's over here in Missouri that if this bird gets in your pond, if he's able to get fish out of it, he will keep coming back and keep coming back until he cleans that pond completely out. Once he cleans the pond out, the duckweed takes over and the pond goes stagnant. And it's a mess. So if you put like carp in there, or if you put perch in there, those are two fish that will eat that duckweed, and they'll maintain it down. The duckweed will keep oxygen in there, and you know, basically the pond will be balanced out.
I'm just wondering if there's a fish that you can get that basically will not eat the other fish, but it'll eat the herring if it comes by to try to get the fish.
Yeah, alligator gar maybe.
Over the top of your pond, it'll stop them herring. They'll get tangled up in it. And I wonder if herring is good eat.
Well, I don't know, but from what I understand, it's a $25,000 fine to shoot one. Because they're supposedly on the endangered list. Anyway, we're down to the wire, folks. I mean, we could actually run this over a little bit if you want. Is the conversation worthy?
Are we still broadcasting on Awake?
No, we're not on Awake anymore.
Okay.
But anyway, so let's say we go over for 5 or 10 minutes. What do you think?
Yeah, sure. It's a video station.
Because we're having such a good show, we got a heck of a crew on here. We've been joined by Muhammad. We've got we just lost Muhammad. We got Thomas on here. We got Justin on here. We got Jermaine on here, and we got Muddy on here.
I was kind of interested, and I have never met Muhammad before, so I was kind of interested in what his specialty is.
Well, hopefully we'll get him back on here. He might have an internet connection problem. We have that every once in a while. It depends on what country they're in, whether or not their internet connection holds up very well. But anyway, with that duckweed, found a whole lot of different uses. We know that there's all kinds of uses for wood ash. That you know, you can use it for energy, making soap, and all kinds of stuff. We talked about how trees are able to take water from like 26 feet under the ground and pump it 40 some odd feet up in the air, depending on how tall the tree is. That's pretty impressive. So,
right,
if you could mimic that and be able to pump water from out of the ground, even if it was a slow process, you know, it's an extra drip in the bucket, so what? You know, maybe it'd take you a week to pump up a gallon of water, I don't know. But maybe there's a way
capillaric action.
Yeah. And if it has to do with heat, what's to stop you from building a heat source at the top where the cool, whatever, you know, however, to get to heat the tube up, to cause the I did a video a long time ago where I basically heated up the coil in order to pump water. You see what I mean? Thermal siphoning is what they called it.
Yes.
So, basically, maybe it's not going to be over unity, but maybe it's going to be efficient. And if it was an engineer properly, maybe it'd be super efficient to where you wouldn't have to use so much doggone electricity. And if the people who were concerned about the environment could understand, you could get these people on to the table in the right shop and engineer things like we've been talking about here forever and a day.
Well, I think the problem is most of the people who are interested in or worried about energy consumption or saving the earth or whatnot are only interested in engineering how many votes they can get.
Well, I think I tend to agree with you on that one.
I think we need to just stick to people who are seriously worried about you know, dealing with life in general, and they want to solve life's problems, you know, instead of making somebody else solve it for them by going and working for them. Some of these people, I swear, they would basically tear down every piece of technology and enslave an entire race just so that they could send people up to get an iceberg. By the time they got back, they could have an ice cube to put in their drink and then say, and then call it technology.
Yeah.
You know.
That's right. The worst ones, FBI just reopened the case on, so hopefully that'll disappear.
Well, check this out, guys. In the old days, if you go back to like times during you know, when everybody was going out across the West or whatever, go West, young man. Mm-hmm. The lifespan for those individuals out there, because of their quality of life and health care and work, as hard as they work their bodies, it wasn't as long as we got now. We've got a longer lifespan because we've got better medicines and we don't have to work near as hard. I mean, instead of walking 20 miles to work, you drive 20 miles to work and you save the energy off your body. So technology, on one hand, can raise the quality of life and expand somebody's life expectancy, whereas without it, you know, you're going to have to work a heck of a lot harder. But at some point, you know, if abused, technology can backfire in your face as well.
Yep.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's got to be some common sense and some balance to it, but we can make both sides of the fence happy there. You can still make money making fuel, but we can do it in a more cleaner fashion to keep these folks over there happy where they ain't trying to go out and rig the election so they can get their candidate who's going to put you back into the Stone Age in charge. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right.
So anyway, you know, there's all kinds of possibilities out there. We're only limited by our imagination and how much we're willing to work to do it. But I don't care what anybody says out there. I've proven free energy over and over and over again. Now, until I get the actual tool or physical free energy device manufactured, then I'm going to have this battle with everybody and his brother because they're overlooking the simple. The simple of this is the Earth is a thermoelectric generator, self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. It has so much energy, more than we'll ever use in a trillion lifetimes. If we took care of this planet would take care of us. the waves coming in from the oceans, the waves coming in from the lake, the river flowing down a deal, the wind blowing by, the sun shining down, produces more energy than we would ever be able to use. If we strategically built our power grid, there is no way physically possible that we'd ever run out of electricity. Everybody on this planet could leave their lights on 24/7 and not even have to stress over it.
But yeah, look at the old telegraph system. It used to have earth batteries, but the deal is they never had to charge them.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, the batteries got stronger and stronger over time, and when we get a magnetic storm, it actually kind of, the electricity gained by that almost blew the whole system.
Yeah, started fires, man. Shocked some of the telegraph operators.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I bet we could probably just run along wires and collect that and just go ahead and polarize it with a rectifier or something and just keep collecting it along the way in a long string of series string.
What about all the hot springs in this world, man? You put some thermoelectrics basically set down in there inside some really thick glass, something that's not going to pollute the ecology of the thermals of the spring, but be able to absorb that heat and transfer it into electrical energy. You could do this in a beautiful manner. I mean, you could color glass, make a wall, colored glass and decorative, It wouldn't even take away from what nature looks like. It'd just make it look cool.
What is it, Greenland or Iceland that actually uses the geothermal from the geysers and all that and the hot springs underneath it? You remember, Thomas?
No.
I don't know, but I'm glad they do, and I'm impressed by it, and I'd love to see more about it. So if you ever find any links, throw them in there in the chat there so we can check them out. Because all over the place, Hawaii is a prime example. I mean, they're basically, Hawaii's made up of volcanoes, some of which are active, and they live happily ever after right beside them, unless something blows and they're too close or whatever. But
that's even Gibbons knows.
But they have access to enough energy to run for... What kind of gases come off of a volcano? How many different natural gases that you could actually, tap into? Because it's going to go out in the atmosphere anyway. Why not send it down a pipe and cook your biscuits with it,
That's a good idea. I ain't never heard. Little vacuum line up on that thing. I guess as it gets away from the heat at the top, it would cool and start going down the tube and get a natural vacuum, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, I would say you could probably use the pumice, too, that forms out, which is basically just a foamed up rock to insulate your pipe, too. It's real easy to drill and modify.
Stephen Gibbons said it was Iceland.
Iceland, correct. Yeah, excellent. Or you could run water from the top down, say you like got a sheet around the outside of the, fabric on the outside of the pipe, and the water running down it would cool it and also make that sucker, put a vacuum on it and just suck all the gas from the top of the volcano.
Well, there you go. You could actually use the heat from they fill balloons, hot air balloons with, hot air and fly up in the air. So why couldn't you use that same thing and some physics to, when that balloon's expanding inside of a chamber, you could actually use that pressure off of that to do something else,
Or you take Hillary and put her at the bottom of the balloon. She got plenty of hot air.
Knights of the Round Table is probably going to be a really interesting show tomorrow, folks.
Yeah, I'm stepping over the line again. Bad, buddy, bad.
He's going to put Muddy down there. Looks like he's got plenty of hot air for right now.
Well, okay. It is Muddy.
Take plenty of energy off of him until the election's over.
Yeah, Muddy, it is mad science after all, so we can figure out scientific methods by which to try to make politicians honest. That would be interesting. And like somebody said at one point about putting something on the politician's mouth and using that hot air for energy or whatever, the flapping of the jaw to move some magnets.
Yeah, this.
While we're on the subject, then I guess we need to find a way to basically power the world off of stupidity, because we're never going to run out of that.
Well, there's proof right there. You can do that. That's the Holy Grail, because we got a lot of stupidity available.
Yeah, just like the old days, Thomas, there, I got on brain food there, and I vented, just kind of like one of my old shows. So, yeah, you missed that one. That was a great one.
All right, folks, we've really got to get up out of here, but check this out. You know, we've put out some serious ideas for you to contemplate on. If you got ideas, jump over there to shazizradio.com/superchat.html and throw those ideas on the table. Jump on the radio show. I want to thank Muhammad for jumping in here and everybody else, Thomas and Jermaine and Justin and Muddy. You know, go check out their YouTube channels, the ones that's got YouTube channels. You guys throw your links out there for everybody, and, you know, that way, the whole idea is just be able to get the doggone information to everybody. Get the brilliant minds to the table. What do you think?
Mine's http://www.youtube.com/user/muddymuddymudman/.
What about you, Jermaine? Jermaine, throw your YouTube channel up here.
Just Jermaine's Experiments Lab.
Cool.
On you.
Alright, go over to Jermaine's Experiments Lab on YouTube.
Is that your YouTube?
Yeah.
Yeah, if that doesn't work, just do Jermaine Fishwick.
There you go. So check out Jermaine Fishwick or Jermaine, what's it, Experiment Lab? Is that what you said?
Yep.
Yeah. Check it out on YouTube. Check out the solenoid motors that he's working on, because, like I told everybody else, most folks would overlook what I saw in that video. But what I saw in that video, even though this thing wasn't precision made, if you got a wobble, that tells me you got torque. And so imagine what would happen if you put some machining in front of him where he could actually mill precision bearings and perfect parts on there to where this thing would function like a precision instrument. This is what I'm talking about. You encourage people like Jermaine to get out there and do this kind of work and research, and you're going to get the machinery in the future that you're going to need. There's other video links out there. Muddy's Sterling Can Engineer. What's Coffee Can Sterling Engine?
Tin Can Sterling
Engine. Yeah, there you go. Tin Can Sterling Engine. Go look at that video. That's one video that made two friends for life and got us talking back in the day, and here we are still at it.
I like yours, where you took that old black and white TV and turned it into an oscilloscope with just a few parts.
Yeah, that would have normally ended up in the dump somewhere, man, or scrapyard or something, and found a use for it.
And yeah. So if I take a colored TV, now that's got three separate guns. Man, I could make three traces and have them in different colors and overlap them and see if I think that is awesome.
Yep. And check out Justin's works out there. Justin, you got a website you post your links on? Doggone, that boy went to sleep again. He's
don't forget Congressman Bongwater. I like that.
Yeah, Congressman Bongwater. He tells you like it is. He's who you should be electing. What about you, Thomas? Steamboard Factory? Thomas!
He muted his mic again.
Yeah, I was trying to get a hold of somebody else, so sorry.
Tell them your link so they can check out your work.
It's just BorgSteamFactory.com.
Cool.
So, just like it sounds, no spaces. So, if you type all three of those words, though, into Google, it'll pull me right up at the top there, so.
Right on.
Some amazing leather works. Oh, my goodness.
Well, folks, there's a lot of brilliant individuals out of this. Just this panel right here doesn't even scratch the surface of all the people out there. Stephen Gibbons in the chat room is posting links over there for you all the time. If you got information, jump over there and share the chats. We got links to Zero Fossil Fuels website, his live stream over there, RWG Research, so many different ones out there there's some really brilliant alternative energy researchers out there, folks. Check into them, especially if you're concerned about the state of the affairs as far as the energy of the planet and the environmental and all that. We could do it. We got everything we need. We got all the answers. Every single answer to every single question, all the pieces of the puzzle are out there for us. If we put them together, we can literally create heaven on earth. That's the way I feel about it. Anybody disagree?
No.
I also think that from the people in the chat, you know, let's get some suggestions for subjects for the other shows if you want to see something that we haven't covered yet.
Yeah, if there's something right. that we ain't talked about that you're interested in, jump over there at least long enough to throw a suggestion down there. Suggest to get rid of the suggestion box or whatever.
I'm going to have an onboard steam factory, a 3D printing and manufacturing corner kind of page put together at some point soon here, as well as other, you know, like the chemistry and stuff like that, try to help people with their research, and probably have some stuff for sale that's coming from that stuff too, if you want to help some researchers out or something, but you want to get something back in exchange for it. You know, we'll have some little widgets and whatnot and things that basically people will need that they can use to make their better life better. I know if the money going from the sales will basically go towards helping somebody or out there in the research world, so getting materials and whatnot so we can make parts for things that they're trying to design or develop, you know.
Cool. I love
What's the strongest plastic you got there that you 3D print?
The strongest plastic is going to probably be Lexan, so...
Would it do for the star joints of a geodesic dome?
I'm pretty sure if it's done right, you could. It's basically the same stuff that bulletproof glass is made out of. So
cool.
It's almost virtually shatterproof. So.
All right. Well, we got to go, folks. I'm working on a boat. And if it works, I'll get a video out of it. I'm working on an ion drive boat. I think it's possible because if you ever watch any of them static, where water likes to bend towards static, then and you've got a mechanical mind, you can visualize what it is that I'm trying to pull up. So if I can successfully build a boat that runs off of a little negative ion generator, I'll share it with the world. So take care, everybody. Peace and love. You've been listening to Mad Science. Stay tuned for the Knights of the Round Table. Same time, same channel, different day. Sunday. Peace.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.